Here we go.
Who the fuck is that guy? What's going on?
Oh, I just seen the latest news from Las Vegas.
What's that?
Well, not only is his brother a pedophile, but the security guard, in like the week after the shooting, was allowed to leave the country for a couple of days. He went out to Mexico and then came back.
Okay.
Like, how does that work?
You're the security guard who did what? Broke into the room?
The one that got shot.
Okay.
The only person that actually witnessed this stuff with his own eyes.
Yeah.
The guy right then and there, and it's like, hey, I go to Mexico.
Yeah. Wait, what? Is he Mexican?
Yeah, his last name is Ramos.
Okay.
Nobody knows, like, and they can't get, like, the details on if he was a licensed security guard or if he had to be or whatever. I don't know. It's all just weird. The whole thing is just weird.
Yeah. Mass shootings tend to involve some odd characters.
And they don't have the shooter's hard drive either.
I saw that.
There is a lot of stuff here. This is weird.
So, hang on. Okay. So, the shooter, Paddock... Yeah. Brought a computer, and that was in the hotel room, like a laptop, presumably, and the laptop's hard drive was missing.
I don't know if it was in the hotel room or where it was, but yeah, somewhere he's got a computer and the hard drive is missing.
Well, maybe he and his brother both partook in kiddie porn.
Oh, shit, that's a good one. Oh, fuck me, man, that's good.
Like, being a mass shooter is one thing, but probably the next worst thing is being a pedophile.
Being pedophiles, I'd rather go down in history as a mass shooter than a pedophile.
Me too.
Yeah. Although I did laugh when I was watching whoever was on TV, and this one guy was going, we have a lot of questions for what is arguably the crime of the century. And I'm sitting there going, I don't think that's entirely true. Like, maybe not this century, at least. There may have been one other big crime that happened. Like, it has its own day named after it.
But yeah, sure,
this is almost as big as knocking down two buildings and all this other shit. Anyways, everybody, welcome to MMA and Stuff. I'm Mike. That's Matt.
Yes, welcome. So let's get right into it here because I've got a lot of tabs open. I want to start Xing them out here as rapidly as possible. So this past weekend we had Bellator 185 on Friday night, October 20th. This was in Uncasville, Connecticut at Arena. It's one of those Native American casinos here in the Northeast. I have been there once or twice. Fun fact about me. In the main event, Gegard Mousasi defeated Alexander Shlemenko by unanimous decision. It was 29-28 on all three scorecards. Mousasi didn't look that great. You would have thought he would have been able to handle Shlemenko a little more readily. He got nailed with a left hand early on, and his left eye just closed up on him. I don't know if it was a broken orbital. It kind of looked like that sort of thing because his eye was just shut. And to me, it seemed to hamper him the rest of the fight. I know some people scored it for Shlemenko, but... Mousasi got the nod, but not the debut he was hoping for in Bellator by any stretch.
No, he looked like crap for the most part. We've seen this before. It's like one of these weird things, like the UFC's got this magic ability to pull the string, be like, that's it, you left, you're going to look like garbage now. And, yeah, he did, but, I mean, he probably got rocked in that, I'm sure, you know, fucked with things. Otherwise, he did. That's kind of why I was watching it. I thought, you know, when it gets to this high level like this, a lot of guys can just go out there and the wrestling required to be at the highest level in the UFC is so high that when they get in there with someone like Shlemenko, the striking might be something, but the wrestling is one thing, or even someone like Mousasi can just go, yeah, okay, I have a little bit of an advantage here. Let's go for it.
Musasi was trying for takedowns too and couldn't get them. Like, he just, it was weird.
Fight was just garbage.
Yeah, I mean, considering he's coming off, I mean, the Weidman win is a little questionable, but he's got, you know, the Weidman win, the Vitor win. I think he's like 8-1 in his last 9. I expect a little more, especially because it was like his debut, and I don't know. I don't know if guys take their foot off the gas when they go to Bellator, because you have all these guys, whether it's Ben Henderson or whoever, who have moved on to Bellator and just haven't looked good.
I think there really is something to that. It doesn't seem like it should, because, you know, at the end of the day, you're fighting. You would think you'd always want to be in great shape for a fight. But there are athletes still, and you see this all the time in sports where guys go from one team to another and their performance suffers, or some guys, you know, they step up to the plate in the big moments. And, you know, it's got to be – it's one thing, you're from the UFC, and you know that the end of the road is the biggest money ever. Bellator, it's like, whoop-de-fucking-do. You're going to go headline that Israel show.
You know what I was just thinking, and I've never really thought about it. They talk about it in baseball and other sports all the time, but the contract year – you know, you have this really good season when your contract is expiring to get a new, better deal. And then the first couple of years off that new deal, you don't play as well. And that seems kind of what happens a lot when these guys jump to Bellator. They get that deal, and they go on a run in the UFC. Then they get the deal, and they're just not the same guy. And you wonder if somebody like, Rory McDonald will squeak by a couple wins, and then on his final Bellator fight contract – go out, kill a dude, and try and rejoin the UFC with a higher contract.
He definitely could. I mean, I think that's what all these guys' plan should be anyways. And, yeah, there's probably something definitely to that contract year idea. Look at the UFC. Every fight is basically a contract year because you can be cut at any time if you lose. And generally with these guys like Musasi, if they win, the rewards really are enormous. So they have every incentive to go out there and try real hard, whereas with Bellator – you know, he ain't going to get cut after the first fight or first two fights. It may even be a guaranteed contract for all we know. So he can go out there, and if he's got 5 fights, you know, it's like, fuck it, if I just go 4-1, I'm fine.
Yeah, I know some of those Bellator deals don't have, the win bonus. It's not like 50-50, because that was one of the reasons Mitrione went. He just has a flat fee. He wins or he loses, he gets whatever, 150 grand, and that's what he gets paid no matter what. So maybe that's in some of these deals too. I haven't really looked at the purses or anything, but that could be a factor. Guys don't necessarily feel the need to, you know, go for the knockout or go for that submission. They're happy to either squeak by with a decision, or they're not going to kill themselves for a win either, because they know they're getting paid the same either way. There might be something to it.
Yeah, plus, again, if these guys were really great and worth it, they'd be in. The UFC probably would find a way to sign them. And the fact that the UFC is letting them go, it's just weird. It could just be maybe they got the greatest eye for talent that the world's ever seen.
It could be. Also on the card, Neiman Gracie defeated Zach Boucher. It was a neck crank. He had been going for a rear naked in the first and got it in the second. Not really a rear naked. I guess he just, you know,
neck crank.
Cranked his jaw, yeah.
It's kind of funny when I saw that.
Yeah.
Just to interrupt you.
It's okay.
I thought, like, you know, for years, everybody was like, the technique was always trying to swim your hand underneath the chin. You always had to get the choke, and guys would fight the hands, and, sure, you know, you really want to choke the guy. And then it seems like in the past couple of years, somebody just figured out, actually, just crank the shit out of their neck real hard, they're going to tap.
Well, you can break a jaw that way, right, if you've got enough grip strength, right?
I guess you could. The thing is, like, I've never really seen what happens when someone doesn't tap from that. You know,
right.
Like, I've never seen, like, the – like, I think guys can get hurt. I think some guys get passed out because you can kind of get choked a little bit. But, like, from the pain, like, I think it just may be one of those things where it just hurts a lot. But I don't know if any normal, like, mortal man has the strength to rip your head off.
Probably not. But good
awesome,
win for
– That'd be an
good win for
sure.
I don't know. YouTube would ban it. Good win for Gracie, though. He's undefeated, and who Who knows who he'll get next in the welterweight division. They seem to kind of be building him slowly, but in another disappointing performance, Heather Hardy lost. She's the former boxing champ who Bellator kind of brought in and was hoping it would be a star in their flyweight division. She got destroyed by a woman named Christina Williams, who was an 0-0 pro. This was Hardy's second pro MMA fight. I did a little research on Williams because I was just curious. I'm like, this woman's never fought before ever in a pro fight. She had three amateur fights. I think she did some kickboxing before, but she just destroyed Hardy, and it was almost all standing, too, like broke her nose. Hardy's bleeding everywhere.
She looked like a bigger star than Hardy.
Yeah, it just kind of reminded me of if a kickboxer fought a boxer.
Yeah.
And striking was and kicks were allowed. Hardy just looked out of sorts, couldn't deal with the reach, just really got her ass kicked.
Yeah, when I was watching this, I was like, what the hell was anybody talking about Hardy for? This is embarrassing. Like, not only did she look bad, you know, from an outcome perspective, but she looked like she didn't know how to box. Like, she kind of moved around awkward. She had a big fat ass. She didn't look particularly athletic. And when she threw punches, I wasn't, like, sitting there going, oh, wow, look at that. She really snapped that jab off. Like, usually with the men, you can tell, like, somebody like Alessio Sicara, when he would fight, you go, okay, he's got some classical boxing, the way he, you know, whips those things. Conor McGregor, you can see, okay, he's a good boxer. Like, this chick just sucks. Like, she wasn't moving well. She didn't show any power. And she just got the fuck beat out of her. And honestly, whatever that other chick's name, Williams or whatever, she looked younger and prettier and better fighter. I'm like, I think they picked the wrong horse to back this one.
Yeah, it was bizarre. And, I mean, after the show, I know people were questioning Bellator's matchmaking. Are they not good at it? Or, I mean, who else could you find to fight Heather Hardy besides an 0-0 fighter with no pro fights? Like, they're like, oh, they shouldn't have given her somebody so tough. It's like, that she fought somebody who was 0-0. Like, I don't know who else you could – it was I don't want to say it was like Mickey Gall versus CM Punk. It wasn't that bad of a beating, but even so, it was like you have an inexperienced person versus an inexperienced person. I mean, Hardy on paper should have won this fight. It didn't go to the ground. She kept it standing, and she still got whooped. So
yeah, no, I mean, one thing to do fantasy booking and all that from like that bigger level when guys are a little more established, fighters, I should say, are more established and get an idea of like, all right, you know, if we book Brock Lesnar versus Matt Mitrione, we have a pretty good idea who's going to win that one. But, like, when you're at a low level, especially low level for women, it's a crapshoot. Like, you don't really know. Like, yeah, like you said, she's a fucking 0-0, and this is a world champion boxer. Like, there's nothing outside of if they literally done one of the old, hey, anybody in the crowd, look under your seat, and if you're a woman and you've got the number 45, step right up. You get to fight. Which would be a great gimmick for Heather Hardy.
It would be, until she lost to somebody. I think that's pretty much it for Bellator.
I think so.
All right, then Saturday, kind of afternoon-ish, I guess, in the States, we had UFC Fight Night Cerrone versus Till. This was number 118, exclusively on Fight Pass from, I'm not sure if it's Gdansk, but I like saying Gdansk better. Poland in the Ergo Arena. Attendance was 11,138 with a gate of 677,000. In the main event, Darren Till defeated Donald Cerrone by TKO at 4:20 of the first round. Huge win for Till. It's kind of unfortunate that nobody really saw it because it was a Fight Pass show in Poland. Tough break for him, but
put it that way.
He looked great. He did his job. He did what he needed to. Cerrone got wrecked. I mean, Till looked bigger, stronger, younger, faster. It's one of those fights that, and you never know how somebody's career is going to go, but you might look back on and be like, this was a changing of the guard. Cerrone's 33, 34. This guy's 24. This is the next generation of fighters, and we're going to move into a new era here. You don't like to put that much stock in one fight, but that was my main takeaway. Like, this seemed like a mismatch, Heather Hardy level sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, the size difference was just absurd between these two. Like, this was one of those situations where it's like, yeah, see, Cerrone, this is why you got to cut weight sometimes. But, I mean, I also looked at this, like you said, I wouldn't say it's totally unfair to look at this like a change in the guard, because this is Cerrone's third loss in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And this happens a lot where guys like lose a fight. You go, oh, okay. Then they have like another fight, they lose, but it's not like they lose bad. And then all of a sudden you go, oh shit, that dude looks really old.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, I like to see how Cerrone does against somebody closer to his size.
Right.
Because, you know, he's undefeated.
Right.
He's an undefeated monster at 24 years old. I mean, shit. Cerrone's an old man.
Kind of reminded me a little bit of like Rory McDonald back in the day. He just kind of had that same build. He's big for the division. He's young. He's got a lot of skills already. I mean, the question will be, how's he going to be against a wrestler? I mean, that's the question you've always got to wonder. Can he get taken down and not get up off his back? Which I feel like Cerrone tried to take him down a couple times, and obviously that's not Cerrone's bread and butter by any stretch, but Cerrone wasn't even close to getting a takedown.
Yeah, Cerrone had one takedown briefly, but Till got right back up, and that was actually pretty impressive because Cerrone has used a lot more wrestling, especially since he moved up to welterweight, and he's been very successful with it too, to shocking degrees, really. So what we saw in there was just an ass whooping. It's just a total one-sided, fuck you doing, bitch, type of fight.
Post-fight, Till got into it with Platinum Mike Perry. Perry was outside, like, the cage, like, shaking on the cage and screaming at him. Perry is, like, my favorite gimmick right now because it's such a gimmick, and it's, like, so similar. I feel like it's similar to Phil Baroni. It's just, like, this overplayed, hyped-up, like, I'm trying to think, like jock sort of Jersey Shores sort of gimmick going on. But I like it. It's entertaining. It's different. Not many guys are getting tattoos above their eyebrow that say platinum.
I mean, that's where it goes beyond gimmick. When you're getting the tattoo above your eyebrow, like, that's really committing to the bit.
But what's weird about it is
they flew Mike Perry all the way to Poland.
Well, that's one thing, but Perry's got a fight already booked against Ponzinibbio, which is a good fight, and a fight I kind of favor Ponzinibbio, to be honest, but Perry would have to get past Ponzinibbio to have this fight with Till, obviously, so I'm not sure how that whole booking will pan out. They built the fight, but if Perry loses, it's kind of all for naught, and then we'll kind of have to see how all these other welterweight fights play out to see who Till will get next.
That seems like an awful lot of effort to book Till versus Mike Perry.
I know.
Like, I can actually understand why you'd want to push Mike Perry. I have no idea what he's doing in Poland. Like, that's just really weird. Maybe he's Polish or something. He is kind of stupid, but
I was going to say that. So where Cerrone go next? You think he should go back to lightweight? I mean, what's left for him at this point?
Like, if I get to play God here, and I don't worry if like, I'm not the UFC worrying about like maximizing profits right away, I'd like to see him fight. I don't know, like another former lightweight, so they can fight somebody closer to his size, but he doesn't have to cut the weight yet. Then you can get a gauge of what he's really got. If he comes out and it looks really good and it turns out it's just a size thing, then I'd say, great, drop to 55, start over. But if it's not the size thing, then I'd rather him not have to go through a brutal weight cut and fuck his body up that way. I'd rather him just get punched in the head a lot. So it's...
By bigger, stronger guys.
Yeah.
It's
an odd approach to healthcare, but it's part of the what I call the Mike Cade for all.
Yeah, I mean, it's three straight losses. I mean, he's getting to be in his mid-30s, and obviously if there's a couple guys in the UFC who have been in a lot of wars, he'd be at the top of the list and has taken a lot of shots, and he's got the weak liver, and it's just like,
we got the Robbie Lawler fight, so what else do we need?
I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing him fight a couple. I'd like to see him fight Mike Perry. That would be fun, but There's a lower level welterweights, but I don't know. I don't know what he does next. But three losses in a row, and he did not look good in this fight. Doesn't bode well for Mr. Cerrone.
Yeah, but the UFC runs a shit ton of shows, so he'll be back.
Oh, I'm sure he'll be back. He'll probably fight in 2 weeks.
Headline, yeah.
Who knows? In retrospect, do you think putting this fight on Fight Pass was a mistake? Because I certainly do.
No.
No? Wouldn't this have been, like, from a bookings perspective, like, FS1 main event or on the Fox card or somewhere where people would have... How many people actually saw this fight? You think 50,000 people saw this? How many people saw this thing?
I have no idea. And not many. I mean, that's for sure. But, again, you have to do something for your fight pass. And
true.
Cerrone's coming off the two losses in a row. There's no way he was... I mean, you can main event anything these days with the way the UFC is. But he really shouldn't be somebody you'd expect to be rewarded with a real main event anywhere. And, you know, an undercard fight on Fox or something like that versus headlining like a Fight Pass exclusive. Like, not Fight Pass prelims, but Fight Pass exclusive in another country. You got to do something for the polls. I mean, they're stupid, but they do recognize names.
In the semi-main event, there was a name they recognized. Karolina Kowalkiewicz defeated Jodi Escobel by unanimous decision, 30-27, 30-27, and 30-26. Kowalkiewicz was the better striker. She was taller, bigger, faster. Just kind of tooled Escobel on the feet and got the win. Took her down a couple times, took her back, I think. Kind of a basic performance from Kowalkiewicz, but she was certainly never in danger.
I didn't even see this fight.
I was
watching the show. I had to go somewhere. It took me like an hour to get there. I caught the main event. I was like, I can watch the rest of this. Who gives a shit?
Did you see the Blachowicz-Devin Clark fight?
No, that's when I left.
That was interesting. It was pretty equal the first round, and then in the second round, Clark went for a takedown, and Blachowicz just kind of sidestepped him and put on a rear naked choke standing, like no hooks in, like a Roddy Piper sleeper hold, and Clark just tapped. I was like, what the? Like, you couldn't twist or move or do anything to try and get out of that? Like, it was a bizarre finish, and a finish you don't rarely see at this level, especially like in the light heavyweight division. It was weird.
Not really sorry I missed it, but
yeah, it was a good finish. It's worth seeing because it just was odd. The prelims. There wasn't a lot exciting on the prelims. A lot of decision finishes, but one fight caught some people's eye. That was Andre Feely defeating Artem Lobov by unanimous decision. 30-27.
Really?
Yeah.
Really have to talk about this gay faggot shit.
I think we should address it. Yes. So Lobov is obviously training partners with a guy named Conor McGregor. He's kind of a well-known MMA fighter slash boxer.
Lobov is a former headliner.
Suit designer. Lobov did headline a Fight Night? What was it? Oh, Cub Swanson.
Yeah.
No, it was on FS1, I think. Cub Swanson. It's like in Nashville, remember? Like, is Cub Swanson fighting Artem Lobov in Nashville? But whatever. Anyway, Feely won the fight. He got a knockdown. He's the better fighter. Lobov is... I want to say he has a losing record now. Let me just confirm that.
Oh, wasn't he exactly even?
Lobov is now 13-14, 1-1.
Yeah, damn it, he fucked it up.
So now he's under 500. After this lock, he's considering retiring or starting a boxing career.
No, he's got to fight one more fight.
To get to 14-14, 1-1?
I'm sorry, dude, but he's fucked. If I was him, I'd never be able to stop. Because you'd always have to want to be, like, even. I would never, like, you have to lose... I could not live with myself knowing I could have that crazy perfect record if I had one more win. If I had lost like two in a row, we'd be like, fine. I guess a couple of years ago. But one, like, especially with the extra 1-1, like you have a no contest and a DQ, like that's special, man. He's fucking us out of this chance. Fucking Russian strike again.
During the fight, McGregor
and
was...
By the way, if anybody cares, they don't. I know I interrupt you. I don't really care. If you want to know why America will never take soccer seriously, unfortunately, I have on the Chicago Fire versus New York Red Bulls on my TV. Chicago Fire in the MLS playoffs for the first time in 6 years. It's a little rainy out today, but not too bad. Anyways, one of the players here at the 67th minute from the Chicago Fire grabbed the ball on the sidelines, picked it up, put it over the back of his head, as you do when you're about to throw in the ball. And as he went to throw it forward, the ball just slipped out of his hands and fell behind him. Like, we're fucking five-year-old children out there playing. No wonder Europe laughs at us.
It's because it's a pay-to-play system. We've been over this.
Yeah.
If you didn't have to pay to play, you could hold on to the ball better. Clearly, that's
or
the issue.
Hold on tighter. They don't let shit go.
Conor McGregor used to be poor, and he was cage side, yelling to Lobov throughout the fight, cheering him on. At one point, the ref, Mark Goddard, had to tell Conor to calm down and be professional, because Conor technically wasn't one of the corner men. He was on the other side of the cage just, like, screaming at Lobov during the fight in, like, his three-piece suit that he designed himself. And part of it, like, I can appreciate because it shows, like, he's still passionate. He flew to Poland. He cares about his teammate. There's something to that. At the same time, I feel like he's putting on a show just to keep his name out there. I feel like he's just living the gimmick to a degree. So that was probably the most interesting part of the whole fight was Conor's antics outside the cage.
Yeah, I thought he just came across like such an asshole. Like,
yeah.
if I was like Lobov, I'd be like, fuck you, man. Like, come on. Like, yes, him flying to Poland is nice, but like, there's no reason to do that. That you're not a corner man. You're just making a big show of yourself. If you stayed in the crowd and did that, that'd be fine. But when you hop over that barrier, you're suddenly making this a special deal. You glory hog. Because nobody's allowed to be famous if Conor isn't making them famous. What a jerk. I hope he enjoys this $100 million.
Then post-fight video came out of Conor walking back to like the dressing room, the locker room, whatever it is, with Lobov, and he's got his arm around him. And, like, three times he calls Andre Feely, like a fucking faggot, basically. And he says it multiple times. And this got a lot of press because, you know, that's not a good word to use nowadays.
In Ireland should be more refined in their language.
Well, I mean, that's I guess, the big question. Do you think Conor was... Because... It's weird because there's an argument out there that I saw all over the place that he didn't know the cameras were there and he wouldn't have said it if he knew the cameras were there. But I don't think that's a good argument. Like, if you're going to be homophobic or racist or whatever, it's not okay to do it in private or public. So I think that's a crappy defense of McGregor in this situation. Could that term mean something different in Ireland than it does here when you're talking to an Irishman? I don't know.
Yeah, he's really sitting there going, all right, Artom, look, back in the 1800s, it was not just a bundle of sticks. A faggot was considered a bundle of anything that was a burden. That man was a burden to you out there. No, he's calling him a faggot. He's calling him homosexual.
Right.
In which... Honestly, I thought there was a really, really weird post-fight, oh, you'll do better next time. It's like, you lost to a faggot. Like, what? Like, if you get your ass kicked, when you stand up and your buddy goes, yeah, by the way, it's a tranny that's beat your ass. Like, that doesn't make you feel better about what just happened. You're not happy because, like, oh, yeah? Oh, really? He's gay? Like, if he'd lost, he'd be like, you know what, man? I think he's on steroids. You'd be like, yeah, fucking, he cheated. Now, I think he's, you know, getting a hot beef injection. Nah, that doesn't make me feel better about myself. I lost to a faggot. Also, I think you can say the word and not be a homophobe. You know, it's like...
There was the argument that... I mean, Conor putting out pro-gay marriage tweets in Ireland and supporting that cause. And I don't think he's homophobic either. I mean, like, 20 years ago when I was a kid, people would say fag all the time. And it wasn't a big deal, but... like, times change, and, you know, certain words are insensitive or, you know, people take offense to, and you gotta respect that and remember that. I mean, it's the only decent thing you can do, so I can understand why people were offended by it, but you gotta wonder what the intent was as well. Is he anti-gay? I don't think so. I think he used a poor choice of words, which people occasionally do.
Yeah, and it's funny, because even though, I mean, I'll say it here and there, I actually really don't use the word. I don't say it. It's just kind of one of those things. I'm like, yeah, it's a cost-benefit analysis of, okay, it'll probably hurt somebody. Like, I don't need, like, I have plenty of other ways to say horrible, vile things. And honestly, the more you limit me, the more creative I have to become, the better the insult. Like, you just call somebody an asshole, like, okay. But, like, when you really get in there deep and, like, yeah, that's when you can really hurt someone. So, to me, if you really want to hurt someone, you got to go deep. You got to really examine them. It's not just, oh, you're an asshole. It's, you know what, I can see why your father left you at the baseball stadium. Yeah, no, that makes sense now. You really are kind of, you know what, you really do bother him too much. It is your fault. That's way more than faggot.
Right. I mean, the other thing, like, to me nowadays, it's like, it's not even like a good insult. It's like, I don't care if people are gay. I don't give a shit. Like, using that as an insult is just like, it's lame. Like, I get it means you're effeminate or a pussy or whatever, but it's just like a shitty insult at this point. It's like, I don't care about two guys having sex. I don't give a shit. Like, it doesn't, it's just a lame insult.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I've been working on this idea in my head of, like, rewriting Carlin's 7 words you can't say on TV deal. But, like, okay. I think we need to look at these and figure out, like, what are the insults we want to keep? Because, like the word pussy, I actually don't really use that word. Because I'm thinking, why do I want to associate something negative with that? That's great. It's like calling somebody a cocksucker. I don't want people to get the idea that being a cocksucker is a bad thing. I want to encourage it. I feel like I should use the word cocksucker to be like, you're such a good cocksucker. People be like, oh, thanks. Like, shit, yeah, fine. Shit is fine. That's always disgusting. There's no value to it. But don't impugn the ass or the dick. Like, I don't want women to associate negative things with the dick. I want people to be like, man, what a dick. People are like, yeah, I could ride that. Yeah, I like riding dicks. So, like, I think we need to redo it and figure out, like, what words really should be offensive, so we create that link in our head.
I always thought, like, suck it was, like, the dumbest line ever, because, like, Kyrie Irving, like, after a Celtics game or something, somebody yelled something to him about LeBron, and he yelled back to the fans, suck my dick. And it's like, do you, like, I've never understood. No,
I think
why do you, why do you want that teenage kid fan in the stands to blow you? Like, I've never understood that as a comeback. Or, like, when DX did it, like, clearly they're not gay and they don't want dudes to blow them, but they're telling everybody in the arena to do it.
But when
it was always a weird thing that I never really got behind.
When they started doing it, it wasn't DX that started it, it was the Wolfpack. But, you know, they're all kind of in that same group. And that was kind of back to when Shawn Michaels was doing, like, the whole I'm kind of gay bisexual thing. I always thought there was, like, some sort of, like, the, hey, man, why don't you be gay and come over and suck my dick type of deal. And then it just kind of became, like, a, oh, I'm not supposed to do this, like, shock, funny thing. But, yeah, at its core, it is very odd. It's like, oh, yeah, I don't like you. Perform fellatio.
That happened, and it was a story. Anything involving Connor's a story. Do you think he should apologize? Do you see an apology coming, or do you think he's just going to let it go and people will forget?
I can see him actually doubling down. Like, sometimes Connor, like, will just be like, ah, fuck you, I'm not going to do that.
Mm. Okay.
Although he's got so much money at stake in these things, he'll probably be like, I shouldn't have said it, and...
Yeah, I mean, there's some sponsors. You look at what happened with Verdum and Maricone and that whole thing, and he had to go do some outreach with LGBTQ groups and that sort of thing. You wonder if the same. I mean, Connor said a homophobic slur that more people in the States and Europe would know than Maricone.
I do think that Connor would argue, and I think somewhat successfully, I'm saying this in what was supposedly a private moment. for Doom and yelling it on camera, and he knew he's on camera. And he could also argue, again, I think with some degree of validity, I'm dealing with a guy whose first language isn't English, so I have to use more base terms. And in that case, I think it would be easier to use words like faggot if you're someone doesn't speak English, because it's, you know, having to go through and explain, like, look, I know you're from Russia, you guys don't have any gays over there anymore, but over here, we have men that love each other, and that's okay. And it's all right if one of them is bigger than the other. Some people like them hairy. That's fine, too. We allow all that here in America. As long as they don't put on a dress and want to go in the bathroom, then we can draw the line. But other than that, we let them do what they want. Oh, fuck, I said America. Ireland is like America. It's like our 51st state.
Similar. Anybody else on the undercard catch your eye?
No, I just remember watching it and thinking, man, the fights were okay.
Yeah. Yeah. There wasn't a lot of finishes or anybody who really stood out. Marcin Held finally got a win, so that was good. He was 0-2 in the UFC, so that was kind of nice to see. Sam Alvey, who we talked about last week, having to cut 30-plus pounds in 2 weeks, was unable to. He weighed in at 189, so he missed weight by 3 pounds and then lost by unanimous decision 30-27 on all three cards, and he looked like garbage. But there was a funny stat I saw. He's cut, like, the most wins in the middleweight division since 2014. Sam Alvey.
Yeah, that's a dumb thing.
I know, but it's just interesting because you don't think of him in that way. But
that just reminds me of all the times I see baseball stats, and like my dad used to always go off on this, and it was true. He's like, oh yeah, they have a stat. He bats really well against left-handed pitchers in day games following night games on the West Coast.
Right.
So much stuff. It's like, okay, I guess that at middleweight since 2014, probably at a certain point in 2014. Yeah, okay. It's like, okay, yeah, I get it, but it's not like he's Donald Cerrone, although he is actually really fucking busy.
Do you know he debuted in the UFC August 16th, 2014? Do you know how many fights he's had since then?
I would guess 11.
13. Jeez. 13 fights in 3 years.
God, that is really impressive.
It is. But
he's also been at a level where it's almost a glorified, like, indie run, you know, like whoever he fought, the it was another Kazakhstani there, not Kazakhstani.
Ramazan Emiev was his name.
Yeah, he's from Dagestan there, another one. I actually thought for a guy who's undefeated and they had a lot of hype coming in, I thought he looked like shit. I'm like, you're not impressing me like the other Dagestanis do there.
Well, it was weird. I was looking at his record. He's only 5'10", and I think he usually fights at welterweight. I think he moved up too for some reason. I don't know if he was a last minute substitution, and then they found somebody else to replace him or what. But I don't know.
He's still a Caucasian. So I don't like him.
He didn't look good in this fight either. But I think that was pretty much UFC Gdansk in a nutshell. Except there was one fight that was scheduled to happen but didn't because there were some rowdy soccer fans in attendance. Did you hear about this?
No.
Okay. So Anthony Hamilton versus Adam.
Oh, I wonder what happened. To that. I thought someone got injured and I just didn't pay attention.
No, they were scratched from the card. So. I'll just kind of read this to you. They weren't at the ceremonial weigh-ins. It's weird because the whole story is still not out, and I don't know what the deal is, but UFC officials said that the two fighters did not appear on stage at weigh-ins because of security concerns inside Ergo Arena in Gdansk, Poland. However, hours later, the promotion announced the fight was off the card and will now take place at November 19th at UFC Fight Night 121 in Sydney. Basically, Wisgorov and Hamilton were in attendance at the ceremonial weigh-ins. However, a few dozen Lechia Gdansk Ultras, who are extreme and sometimes violent supporters of the local soccer team, showed up just prior to the session. Wisgorov is a supporter of Ruch Chorzo, a Lechnia Gdansk rival team from South Poland. Police in riot gear outside the Ergo Arena following UFC Gdansk ceremonial weigh-ins showed up. After the group made their presence known with a few synchronized chants, venue staffers put up a barricade in front of the section where the rowdy fans were seated. the UFC took precaution in keeping Wisgorek and Hamilton from participating in the weigh-ins. So, yeah, really weird scene. They had cops there in riot gear, and they were concerned there was going to be a riot because this Polish fighter liked a soccer team, and there were fans of another soccer team there. So they weighed in, the real weigh-ins. They both made weight. It was a heavyweight fight anyway, so it wasn't like they were going to miss it. But then the fight got pulled as well. And I don't know if it was because of these security concerns or what the story was.
It's got to be. And I mean, that's...
But what the... It's fucking weird.
It's really weird. I mean, it shows that... And I've been over this a lot over the years. I love it, though. The complete just difference between what soccer means in Europe, really the world, but especially like Europe, compared to here. Like, we don't have any sport at all. Nothing engenders this kind of reaction.
No.
It's just so weird, and you see the ultras, they're a danger. I mean, the ultras are...
Is this like the hooligan sort
yeah.
of thing?
Yeah, what okay. happened is the hooligan culture basically got weeded out of England in the 80s, but it's really popped up in the Eastern Europe and in the South of Europe as well. And there just seems to be there's a growing faction of usually these are called ultras for each club. Just these crazy fans, and it's almost kind of like if Richard Spencer cared more about, like, the Cubs beating the Cardinals than he did about race relations, even. Like, that's okay. how crazy these people are. Like, they're part nut jobs, but even amongst their nut job things, like, no, soccer's more important than even crazy cause. Like, I don't, no idea. I mean, to go so far as to show up to start fights because a fighter supports another club... I mean, there's some rivalries out there, man, but that's real. That's absurd hardcore. Reality, they're probably just a bunch of thugs, the European Antifa anarchist types, just looking for an excuse.
Yeah, I can't imagine showing up at a UFC weigh-in and, like, planning to, I don't know, what if you're planning to get into a brawl with people or scream at this fighter because he likes another soccer team. It is... That's a whole other world to me.
I mean, I can understand, like, I'm going to say I'm not going to like this guy because he supports the other club, or maybe you boo him a lot, or you even yell at him. But, like, to disrupt it to the point where they're like, nope, canceling this fight, because if we don't, something really violent is going to happen in this cage fight. Like, that's, and again, this happens all the time in Europe. Like, whenever this happens, it's not like everybody goes, this is the malice in the palace. The one time when sports went crazy and the basketball players punched everybody, they're just like, oh, look at that, it's Saturday.
We've talked about this in the past, but the UFC's TV deal with Fox is expiring, and UFC President Dana White told the Wall Street Journal that the promotion could end up on a digital platform and not a cable network after the current deal with Fox Sports is up at the end of 2018. Dana White said, all that TV stuff is about to change. When I grew up, we had channel 3, 5, 8, and 13, and then the channel Sesame Street is on. Those are all the channels that
we
had,
right? That's
how I
talked about it, too. And that one, I don't know what channel that is.
White continued that at home in Vegas, he has cable and DirecTV. That's 2,000 channels, and there still isn't much to watch, he joked. That's why he thinks the UFC will be a hot commodity for a potential broadcast partner. White said, nothing is on. I think that we have the type of content that people will watch. Not every fight that I put on is a mega fight and a fight that spills over into the mainstream, but I'll get those twice a year. That's why I love my content. My content works. My content is quick, exciting, and fun to watch on any platform. So, I mean...
You're a fucking fight promoter, and you just keep saying content. I know you right. have to in this day and age, but what a bunch of... Pardon my language. What a bunch of pussies.
He went on to say, I think where you really see it is, look at ESPN. Look at how powerful ESPN was 5 years ago. What they were getting per subscription. Their subs are dropping. They're scrambling to figure it out right now. There's no doubt that the internet and OTT is where it's all going. So it'll be interesting to see when the smoke clears who's still around and who's not. And, I mean, he's got a point. I mean, I, as they say, cut the cord this year and got rid of Xfinity, and I'm using Sling, and it works for me, and I'm saving $1,000 a year doing it. So, the question is, how much money are the traditional networks, your Foxes, your ESPNs, willing to spend on UFC content? Or is Netflix going to offer them? Next, Netflix is $80 billion in debt. What's another couple hundred million? But the drawback with that is they're going to lose eyeballs, and how will that affect pay-per-view sales and advertising rates and everything else? So there's something to it, and I think he's just playing everybody, and he's trying to get the price up and get the highest bidder, obviously. Do I think he's going to go with Netflix? No. But who the hell knows? If the price is right, maybe they would.
I think he goes with whatever pays the most, regardless of where it's at.
And I think what if it's some, like, if it's just some, I mean, I don't even know what, I'm saying Amazon. Let's say
Amazon.
Amazon
would be a good idea.
But,
I think
okay.
That fits.
Do you, well. Though? I mean,
because Amazon's got a ton of money. They're changing
right.
Everything. And,
right.
Like, I would immediately subscribe to Amazon Prime.
Right.
And I would enjoy the shit out of it. And, again, they're a company that's got so much money they can burn.
Right.
And, plus, you still get a ton of fucking exposure.
Mm.
They'd be all over, the biggest web, salespeople in the world.
True. Do you think that's better than being on broadcast TV, though? How many people are going to watch fights on Amazon? I know the world's changing. I'm just not sure if it's there yet. Like, I think a week ago or 2 weeks ago we were talking about it a little bit, and it's like, it's probably the wave of the future, but is there still one more really good TV deal they can get before TV and broadcast TV totally crashes?
I think
so
yeah.
It's an interesting time because it's going to change. It's happening. You can see it. You can feel it. The early steps are there for this, but it's a very interesting time to see what they do next.
It's funny. I was looking at my TV box today, and I was just looking at it, and I'm like, it's kind of weird that we think that, like, getting a cord to connect your computer to the TV is such a big deal or this or that. If I want to watch TV otherwise, I have to call up a company and let them put a box in my house and put special cords and everything. Whereas, if you just have an internet TV or whatever they fucking call them, just flip a button. And there you go. You can watch everything. And I don't think I don't think they will leave TV yet, but I think that they'll probably be part of something that's a very close mixture. And I look at the way that Fox has unfortunately handled soccer. NBC Sports done the same thing. It's just awful. Whereas they have some big matches here and there on TV, but they used to have everything on different channels or online for free, but now you got to subscribe online to get all those extra things. And I have a feeling that it's exactly what they'll do with the UFC. Probably just, although, I say that, and I wonder, if you're the UFC, if they think it's worth their money to have you on, then it's got to be worth it for you to put them on Fight Pass.
Right.
Although maybe if you're Amazon, you could afford to pay more because that would be, again, that's something I think that if you're Amazon or somebody, you have to do, because you got to do something to make a huge, huge statement. And mm-hmm. That's something that is a pretty big statement. And it's the kind of property that can also translate really well to an online streaming service as opposed to like a traditional sport. Whereas a traditional sport, everybody watches across the country, but there's so much money in local markets. Whereas the UFC is just, they just have their content, as Dana calls it, just like pro wrestling, only it's real.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see what they do. I mean, UFC is weird because their business model is different than every other sport because they've got the pay-per-views, and that's where still the majority, maybe not this year, but most years the majority of their revenue comes from traditional broadcast pay-per-view. And then they have also got Fight Pass. So if they go with like a streaming service, whatever it might be, how do they figure all that out? Are they still going to do live cards on Fight Pass? Are they just going to ask for a shit ton of money and can pay-per-view totally? Like, how does it work? Is Amazon going to give them several hundred million dollars for non-pay-per-view fights and Fox Sports 1 cards? Is that worth it to Amazon? I have no idea, but I'm looking forward to seeing how it plays out.
And if you're the UFC, may have looked at this past year on pay-per-view and perhaps the new owners, being the morons that they are, think, well, the pay-per-view part of this is dying. Let's go to something else. And I just kind of, even now, I was just thinking, like, we think pay-per-view is being different, but it's really no different at all from Fight Pass. Either way, you're paying to watch fights above and beyond what you would get with your normal TV. I remember back in the day, you used to be able to order, like, you know, we get, like, all 10 WWF pay-per-views for, like, $200 a year or whatever the fuck it was. So, and that's essentially the exact same thing as Fight Pass, just with less content.
Mm. Well, it's interesting, too, because WWE already did this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They already got rid of all their pay-per-views, and granted, that it's probably cost them a lot of money over the years, and looking back on it...
The UFC would lose.
Right, but it looking back on it, it was a pretty ballsy move from 70-year-old Vince McMahon at the time, you know what I mean? That took some guts and had some vision. I'm not sure it's paid off or was the right move at that time, but every year we get a little closer and closer to that making more and more sense.
I think it's paid off huge for them. Their pay-per-view numbers sucked ass. And more than that, you want to be on the ground floor when this stuff breaks. Like, you don't want to be the first people to, like, do all the work necessarily. But Major League Baseball already basically did all that. And so WWE has come in there, and they're going to be really good at having figured out all the kinks and different little things. Whereas when the NBA shows up and does all this stuff in 20 years, they're not going to be as smooth. And also, I think Vince did it simply and purely because it was a ballsy move. I don't think he gave a shit about making money. I think he just looks and goes, oh, yeah? Watch what I can fucking do. Let's see it.
Imagine if he actually put out a good product. What else is going on in the world? Michael Bisping's getting sued. Did you read this story?
Can you choke this out? Can you get it out?
Yeah, I think I'm good. My throat is clear. According to a report by TMZ, the UFC middleweight champ is facing a lawsuit stemming from an alleged choking incident that happened this past July. The suit was filed by a Antonio Gergakopoulos, must be Greek, who claimed he was choked by Bisping when they ran into each other at a 24-hour...
He's surprised because being Greek, he's normally very slippery and slimy, and he was surprised he could get out. He didn't just slip out with all the grease.
So basically, according to the lawsuit, Bisping went crazy on Gergakopoulos for taking his weights without asking during a workout. Antonio claims Bisping called him all sorts of names, including a little punk and an idiot, and then dropped the line, "You don't know who I am." After the verbal tirade, Antonio claims Bisping grabbed him by the throat and began to squeeze, cutting off oxygen. Antonio claims he was about to lose consciousness when another weightlifter broke it up. At that point, Bisping allegedly screamed out, "Let's take this outside."
That's very weird. The language used is what I'm focused on right now. You're an idiot. That's not hurtful language. It's like baby talk. Like, I saw this video, and I think maybe you were the one who showed it to me. Somebody did it. But, like, these white kids, like, these high school kids supposedly, like, simulating rape on a black child, and it was racist. On, it looked pretty fucked up. But one of the things that they said...
I did not send that to you.
One of the things they said in the video was, like, "We're going to fuck you little African-American child." I'm like, wait a second. You don't say African-American child when you're being a racist. That doesn't work. Like, you don't call somebody an idiot when you're really bad. Like, you're a cage fighter, and you go, "You're an idiot. Don't you know who I am?" That's it? Nah. I bet this guy had it coming. Plus, he stole his fucking weights. What a dick. You don't do that. He knew what he's doing. He probably started this shit. Plus, he sounds like he's not American. The Greeks don't count.
Gergakopoulos is filing a lawsuit for assault, battery, and intentional infliction of emotional distress, among other things. Bisping, at this point, has not responded to any calls for comments about the matter. And this is with UFC 217 about a week and a half away.
This is dumb.
The one part of it that's weird is that he did use the terms little punk and idiot in the suit. It's like, those are odd words to choose if you were just making up the story.
Well, yeah.
Like, it almost makes it seem more credible that he chose those words. Because it does seem out of character and weird knowing how many times Bisping has said fuck and every other word, bitch, everything else, yeah, in his promos leading up to fights.
Like, I feel like if I'm a judge, I'm sitting there going, so he called you an idiot, huh? Okay, do you want me to tell him to go have a timeout? Did he not get an extra strawberry on his ice cream tonight? He called you an idiot. I don't know, punch him back. I'd be a great father.
If Bisping did put his hands on him, though, he obviously is going to have an issue.
Apparently, looked at it and said there was not enough there, so whatever he did didn't do any real damage. Yeah, there could be, in theory, something, but the guy didn't get hurt. If he didn't get hurt, he ain't going to get paid.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like it's a civil suit, so there you go. So the latest with Michael Bisping. There has been quite a bit of talk lately, though, about how UFC 217 is going to draw. Joe Rogan, I know, said that it doesn't appear to be selling well. I think he said that on, like, his most recent podcast. But I think people are jumping the gun on this. Like, the theory is MMA fans, current modern MMA fans who became viewers with Ronda and Conor and were part of this boom, weren't around for GSP, don't know him, don't know his history. And this fight at MSG, there's still like 3,000 tickets that haven't been sold, which obviously isn't good, but the ticket prices are jacked up.
Yeah,
they've run six shows in New York. This is the second show at MSG. So, like, how well was it going to draw with anybody on top? Would it have done better maybe with Jon Jones? Maybe. Is it going to do as well as it did with Conor? No, obviously it's not going to draw as well. But there's a lot of talk, like, GSP's not drawing, and I don't know how you come to that conclusion before the fights even happen and we know what the numbers are.
Stupid is how they come to that conclusion. They're just dumb people who shouldn't talk, and we should censor them. We should figure that one out. Probably Russians doing this shit is so stupid.
Like, maybe.
Like, okay, look, I understand that there are people who are fans of Ronda Rousey who wouldn't know George St. Pierre. There'd be fans of Conor McGregor, like newer fans. There are not that many of them. Last I checked, a lot of these pay-per-views are buying like 100,000 fucking buys. So clearly those fans aren't really huge fans to begin with. And it's not like all those million fans that GSP had before. Why would they leave? They were fight fans. They like big fights. What I think there's like, I'll say there's 2 million fight fans. And depending on how excited they are for a given fighter, they'll tune in. It's kind of like boxing. I'm, in theory, a boxing fan once the fight's at a certain level. George St. Pierre's at that level. He's always been, this is fucking stupid. This is a goddamn joke. And then people are going to take whatever the buys are. If it's not a million buys, people are going to say it's a failure. I guarantee you that's going to be the standard, which isn't fair. And it'll still probably...
Well, GSP never really did a million buys before.
No, he's always
the Diaz fight. The Diaz fight was 900, and he was on the 100 card with Brock and Mir, and that did 1.6. But he was kind of an appetizer to the main course there in that fight.
And the live tickets have never, I mean, not never, but they don't always track. You know, Brock Lesnar never really sold a ton of tickets in Las Vegas, but obviously he moved pay-per-views. Different audiences. Plus, I think people have also forgotten, because I did until just now, George St. Pierre adds like an easy 200,000 buys just from Canada.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
He's a fucking god up there. Like, yeah, Canada, they don't have anything. He's a white, polite guy who beats up Americans. It's a fucking Canadian wet dream.
Let's just say the average show does 200,000 buys nowadays, right?
Yeah.
You've got a show at MSG, the second show at MSG, three title fights, GSP's return, plus the Canadian buys, plus just a bump up in the States because it's GSP. Like, I don't know how it doesn't do 700,000 buys.
Yeah, I'm thinking eight or nine.
Me too. I'm saying low end would be 700,000. Like, I've gotten into debates. There was what? One person said to me, it's like fans don't remember him, and they never remember fighters who have had long layoffs. And it's like, you look at Brock, who came back at UFC 200 and did a million buys on a card with basically nobody else. It ended up being Cormier and Anderson Silva, but at that point, Silva was washed up, and nobody even knew that fight was happening, and Jones was off the show. So Brock basically did those million buys off the show.
You don't think there's Amanda Nunes, really?
I don't. I know she was in the main event, but her pay-per-view performances, besides the Ronda one, weren't the best. And then, look at somebody like Kimbo, who didn't fight MMA for 5 years and was on YouTube boxing for a couple years, but nobody really saw those fights. He comes back and sets the record ratings for Bellator to this day. It's just... Yeah.
If anything, time makes people in George St. Pierre's case, I don't think the time off makes him a bigger draw. A lot of guys, it does help because the memories of how shitty they were at the end fade. Not like George St. Pierre had to recover from looking bad or anything. He's still a god when he left. But if Chuck Liddell came back right now, he'd draw.
Yeah, if you book Chuck Liddell and Fedor right now, people would buy that shit. Or Chuck Liddell and who? Chael, somebody. People would pay to see Chuck, especially even though he got knocked out.
Especially for the big, big name guys. Like, these guys, George St. Pierre, in the world of fighting, that's the equivalent of a Willie Mays. Like, you don't forget about Willie Mays.
Yeah, probably not. Good, I'm glad we're on the same page on that. Makes me feel better about myself. Someone who's not feeling good about themselves is Antonio Rogério Nogueira. He was flagged for a potential USADA violation and has been pulled from his fight at UFC on Fox 26 against Jared Cannonier. I know there aren't probably a lot of people upset about that, but he posted a statement saying, "To students, fans, friends, and family, to all who are always by my side, I am here to share with you today that I was surprised by USADA that a diuretic substance appeared in my exams. I am here to try to clarify because we do not yet have all the explanations, but from now on we will investigate the situation in depth. I have told all of you that I am confident in my defense and we will find out what happened."
It's a really awkward way to let all of your friends know that your dick doesn't work.
I don't know if that's a translation from Portuguese or what I'm reading, but that's on MMA Fighting.
Yeah, I think it is a translation.
Yeah, it doesn't read well.
And even if it's not, it would be his words. They're going to be translated in his head. Like, it's never going to come out right. I mean, he's obviously lying. Liar. Because they all are lying. It's like there's this epidemic of diuretics and MMA fighters. Like, everybody in MMA apparently is, constipated and has a limp dick.
Well, diuretics are usually what's it do? It makes you piss more, it either helps you lose weight or it's a masking agent. My limited knowledge of illegal drug use.
It's really it's been used for weight cuts and stuff like that, and it's in theory banned for that. But it's really banned because it helps dilute your samples to the point where you avoid weight drug detection and blah blah blah. And I only did this. It's only a saline drip and all this. And look, they're all cheating. All of them.
One fun fact about what he popped for: the specific substance was hydrochlorothiazide, the same banned substance that former UFC heavyweight champ Junior Dos Santos tested positive for this past summer.
That doesn't surprise me at all. Somebody's getting fired. I think some dude's job it was to keep these guys clean, and he fucked it up.
Yeah.
That's the same camp and everything.
Well, another guy got suspended from – this guy's actually been suspended for 2 years. UFC newcomer Carlos Felipe, also Brazilian, he tested positive for Stanozolol.
Jesus Christ.
He is 22. And he failed stemming from a July 29th out of competition sample collection. And it was scheduled to fight Christian Colombo at UFC Sao Paulo on October 28th. So that he was supposed to fight this weekend. I think it was going to be his debut in the UFC, and he's going to be another guy who failed the test without ever fighting in the company.
When asked about this, Chris Cyborg said, "See, I told you Greg Jackson's camp is the dirtiest in the game." Everybody in Brazil is doing something. Like, and I don't even think it's necessarily like they're all immoral cheaters so much as the stuff is all available everywhere and they know everybody's doing it and they're all really poor and need it. So, I don't know. It's no Guerra. It's not like he was going to help him win. Honestly, I'm glad he got popped just because I think 2 years off would do him some good.
He's going to be like 55 by then.
No, he'll only be like 32. He just looks 55.
Now it's time for your favorite part of the show. Today in MMA history, 3 years ago today, October 25th, what happened?
October 25th, 3 years ago?
Yes, but I can do the math for you. That'd be 2014.
Yeah, I don't know if that's going to be a good one. Let's see. My wife had just left me.
Best move she ever made.
Yeah. For me, at least. Let's see. October 2014. This fight got started in 2015. Let's see, 2014. Let's see. Guillermo Melendez was the lightweight champion at that point. Still, he would lose to Pettis in December. So, you'd have Lawler and Hendricks then, so it's not them. 2014, I think that's true. That I wouldn't be a Brock or anything. Brock would have been 20, way a bit earlier. 2014, October of 2014. I'm trying to think of what I did that month. I don't even really remember how. I had a really good tournament that month. I did really well in a tournament that month. I've got no idea.
It was UFC 179. Does that mean anything to you?
UFC 179.
I'll just tell you. All right. It was Aldo versus Mendez 2.
Oh, that was a great fight.
Which, it was a great fight. But can you believe that seems like a lifetime ago to me. Like, that's before Conor, like, exploded. That was before Conor beat Mendez. That was before Conor beat Aldo. Like, it just seems so long ago. Like,
what
I feel...
What happened, man?
I feel like that had to be 5 years ago.
And yeah, I would have thought for sure. I mean, fuck me, Chad Mendez was already talking about his comeback from 2 years off for steroids.
That was psoriasis cream.
Oh, yeah.
How dare you?
Oh, yeah, I know.
I had a rash.
Yeah, that's a good one. Did you get it from a toilet seat? Come on, man. I mean, you look like you look and you got popped for steroids. Don't give me this, I've been doing this since I was five, blah, blah, blah. I mean, you're probably just using steroids since you're five. Like, I don't really think that's a good answer. You always look like you're jacked, you're a cheater. Good-looking bastard. Oh, he's a midget. I bet I can push him around with my palm of my hand. Just keep him
away. I doubt it. I don't think so.
Probably kick him in the head. Nah. Fuck. Any threat of violence doesn't really work with him. I could sue him for a while and make his life kind of miserable. But he's probably too stupid to really appreciate what I could do. Sorry, that I could fuck his girlfriend.
I doubt it.
I don't even know if he has one. I could kill his children if he has any.
That you could probably do.
I could root on TJ Dillashaw.
Mm-hmm.
Although him and TJ are friends apparently. So,
so anyway, it was UFC 179 3 years ago today. Aldo Mendez 2. It was in Rio, not a good buy rate. 188,000 people bought that show.
They'd be ecstatic with that today.
Any idea what the semi main event was? You're not gonna get
Vitor Belfort. No, is it? No, it wasn't Vitor, and
it wasn't good.
Is it a chick fight?
No.
Is it? I'll say Cesar Mutante.
He was not in the co-main event of this show. No, it was Phil Davis versus Glover.
Ooh.
Yeah, yeah. Here, fun fact. Fight of the night went to Aldo Mendez. Performances of the night went to Fabio Maldonado and Gilbert Burns. Ugh. Not the best show.
No. Great main event, though.
Yes, 3 years ago today. This weekend, Anthony Joshua, the heavyweight boxing champ who beat one of the Klitschkos a while ago, returns to the ring. He's fighting a guy named Carlos Takam, who I've never heard of and I don't know anything about. But I thought it should be noted the best heavyweight boxer in the world is back this weekend, and there's very little fanfare for it.
How do I watch that?
That is a good question. Let me find that out. I think it's on Showtime, I want to say.
It's not on...
I think it's Showtime.
Maybe it's earlier in the day. Oh, fuck me. I'm not looking at Showtime there. I was looking at Annabelle Creation. Yeah, it's on Showtime.
Yeah.
Remind myself to watch that.
But, I mean, the big fights for him are Deontay Wilder and who's the guy, the fat guy who does all the coke?
Tyson Fury. Did he get arrested for something?
I don't know. Probably. He, I mean, those are the fights that could actually draw. I mean, especially the Fury fight in Great Britain would do phenomenal business over there. But
I can think that Joshua just draws well on his own, but it's only in Britain, so does it really count? That's not real money.
I don't know. There's potential there. He's young. He's looked good. He could be after he had the Klitschkos for all those years. I think people are grasping at anything now. But he looks good. He's young. He's won some fights. He could be, you know, that heavyweight boxing champion that people remember from the Tyson Holyfield era.
Grasping at anything should be like the slogan for boxing in general.
Maybe. Hey, if Conor retires, you could say that about MMA too. Then on Saturday, we've got, what is this show? UFC Fight Night, Brunson versus Machida. This is UFC Fight Night 119 coming from Sao Paulo, Brazil. Main event, we've got Derek Brunson versus Lyoto Machida. This is Machida's first fight back, I think, after an 18-month suspension. He was suspended for something weird, like Keto 7, if you remember back, which is like an over-the-counter thing he got and wrote down on his form, and they ended up suspending him for it. One of the weirder suspensions that has happened. But Machida's back, taking on Brunson, who's like a lower top 10 sort of middleweight guy. Will kind of tell us if Machida's got anything left in the tank or not.
Yeah, I have zero interest in this fight. I don't give a shit.
Okay.
Machida's he's a cheater, too.
Machida?
Let's move on.
In the co-main event, we've got Damian Maia versus Kobe Covington.
That I want to see.
Okay, tell me why.
Because it's a great fighter in Maia, an up-and-coming dude in Covington that might be... like the next guy to like kind of watch the division. The fight will probably suck, but I want to kind of see if Colby can do it. Anytime you get to see, you know, new blood coming up with all the credentials and who wants to talk shit, even if it's really bad sometimes, it's fucking me, man. I'll take that any day over like Jorge Masvidal. Just, I'm not going to talk or promote things, but why won't anybody fight me? And then he cries into his.
Do you think this will just end up being like a shitty kickboxing match? Do you think either I don't know if Maia can take Covington down. He never got close against Woodley, and Covington's known for his wrestling. But at the same time, I don't know if Covington wants to take it to the mat with Maia, who's the best jiu-jitsu guy in the UFC. You know, it's a weird, it's kind of a weird matchup.
Yeah, I hope that it's. Yeah, you're right. I would like to think that it all blends in. They just go strength for strength, and we see what wins, wrestling versus jiu-jitsu. But it'll probably just be some boring-ass fight where they just punch at each other, and it sucks.
Yeah, I kind of have that feeling, too, but we shall see.
Like Covington is like one of those guys where if you don't really watch him too much, you go, yeah, I want to see that guy fight. But when you actually see how he fights, he's got a lot of tendencies that lean towards boring.
It's a little bit of Ben Askren, I would say, but it would be fair. On Twitter, Covington wrote, Saturday, Damian Maia is a dead man. I'll wear his skin as a coat when I retire Tyrone Woodley so UFC gold can finally touch his skin. Seems a little much.
Good line. That's a good line. I got to give him credit for that.
Seems a little dramatic. He's going to skin Damian Maia and wear his skin to the cage to take the title from Woodley and then put the belt on Maya's cut-off skin.
Well, you got to do some of your vanquished enemies.
Pedro Munhoz versus Rob Font.
Don't care. Thought Rob Font was a white guy from Scotland, and he's not.
No, Rob Font's good, though. He's a solid little bantamweight. John Lineker fights. He's going to open the main card against Marlon Vera.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Lineker's a little badass. He can punch, man.
Yeah, he really can. He just is just a disgusting dick. The way he fights, just beats on you. So it's one of those things where, like, he does the kind of punching like an older brother would do, where it's not enough to end it, but it's going to hurt for a long fucking time.
Yeah. The question with him is always, what will he weigh for this fight? But he's fighting at bantamweight, so he should make it. He always had trouble at 125, and I think he missed at 135 once as well. Looking if there's any other names on the show. Jim Miller fights Francisco Trinaldo. Other than that, not a lot of names you'd really recognize, I don't think. Oh, what's that guy? His nickname, Antonio Carlos Jr., the jiu-jitsu guy. Shoeface.
Oh, okay.
Shoeface is on here. And he's fucking nasty on the ground. He had that great fight with Eric Spicely. I think it was a week you were away at when you were attending Yale. He had a great fight with Eric Spicely. A lot of good jits in that fight.
I mean,
but
the only downside to this show is going to be if the Americans do well. Because mm-hmm. those Brazilian crowds, they can be so great, but they're just so fucking, like, biased, like, in a weird, weird way. Like, it's one thing to favor your home people, but at least be like the ultras where you boo the other guys and try to attack them. They just sit there and do nothing. It's so weird, and it just takes me out of it. Get angry, throw piss at people, be like the Mexicans.
Well, they do, like, chant you're gonna die and stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's true. But, like, when the bad guy wins, they just go so quiet.
Mm.
And it's always like, and I always hate
like a Japanese wrestling crowd.
Yeah, it really does. Like, all of them go from crazed animals to polite Japanese people. And, like, half the time I'm like, what the fuck just happened? Is the fight over? Why isn't anybody cheering? Like, in America, I don't care if like, you were, like, I don't know, an American-hating Muslim who worshipped Osama bin Laden for free speech purposes. If you got in the octagon and you do, like a back heel kick and knock some dude out, they would cheer. Everybody would go, whoa. They wouldn't go, oh, we don't want to applaud for the guy that hates America. Although that'd be a hell of an experience. I'd like to see the Muslim terrorist that does spinning capoeira kicks inside the UFC.
One other guy to watch is Nico Price. He's 3-0 in the UFC at welterweight. Has a couple good knockout wins. He's fighting Vicente Luque, who sounds Brazilian to me.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah. Who's actually 4-1 in the UFC. It's funny how guys can go so unnoticed like that nowadays with so many fights and so many cards. You got a 4-1 guy in the UFC versus a 3-0 guy, and you've never heard of either of them. But.
Well, in fairness, most of those fights happen, like, in Brazil in the middle of a jungle.
But they're still UFC cards. Big day tomorrow. Do you know what happens tomorrow?
What day is tomorrow?
Tomorrow's Thursday.
Okay, well, this comes out on Thursday.
Oh, God, something's playing in my headphones. So many tabs. Do you know what happens today?
In MMA?
No.
Oh.
In stuff.
Oh, no idea.
President Donald Trump said Wednesday that his administration will release classified government documents about the assassination of President John F. Kennedy on Thursday.
I keep saying about how I'm wondering what's coming next. And they released the Kennedy files. Oh, the holy grail of conspiracy theories is coming out. Holy shit.
Tweet Trumped. Trump tweeted, the long-anticipated release of the hashtag JFK files will take place tomorrow. So interesting, exclamation point.
Like he's giving us a sneak preview. He's teasing us. Guys, can't wait to see what I've seen. Actually, that means there's nothing that good in there, because if there was, he would have told everybody.
Congress mandated the public release of the still-secret documents, including FBI and CIA files, by the Thursday deadline, barring any action by the president to block the release of certain documents. Trump still hasn't made clear whether he'll allow the full release of the documents or block certain files from publication, which he can do if he believes making them public could pose harm to U.S. intelligence, law enforcement, the military, or U.S. foreign relations. Elements of the intelligence community have urged Trump not to release some of the documents.
Yeah, that ain't gonna work.
You think he's gonna let them all out?
I think he's not gonna listen to the intelligence community right now. And
I don't even think he's gonna look at it and just say, yeah, fuck it, because that seems like how he does a lot of things.
Plus, let it out, people. I wanna know what the fuck happened. If they're hiding stuff, now I really wanna know what's there.
Well, because
I really hope that before they get released, there's like this oddly blatant, like whiteout.
Murder?
No, whiteout. And then somebody used like an old school typewriter just to type Ted Cruz's dad's name and everything.
That would be good. Historians who have studied the assassination do not believe the documents will lead to any bombshell new conclusions in the Kennedy assassination, but the documents could shed more light on facets of the investigation and Lee Harvey Oswald's mysterious trip to Mexico City weeks before the assassination. Some have expressed concerns that the documents could be embarrassing to Mexico and damaging to U.S.-Mexico relations. Like, the relations could get any worse than they are now. Like, the shit from 55 years ago is gonna, like, oh, Trump's like, we're gonna build a bigger wall now. Like, what the hell could be in it that could affect Mexican relations more?
I guess if it came out that the Mexicans helped it happen, like, that'd be a pretty big fucking deal if it turns out that all these illegal immigrants are from a country that killed Kennedy. That would be a big one. Boy, oh boy, you think the wall, I bet the wall just got 10 feet higher if that's true.
Fucking crazy. I mean, the JFK conspiracy is like the biggest one ever. That's the holy grail of conspiracies. There's been so many books and so many different theories, whether it was Castro or the mob or JFK wanted to get rid of the Fed and it was Wall Street or LBJ wanted him dead because he wanted to get into Vietnam or whatever. There's so many theories that you would think after all this time something would have leaked and somebody fairly credible would have come out and said, hey, this happened. So to me, there's going to be nothing in these files because somebody would have already let the ball drop and said what the conspiracy was, but it never happened.
Well, plus, again, he was a communist. He'd been to Russia. He was sympathetic to the Russians. Like, whether they directed him to do it directly, I doubt that they actually gave him a command, but he's probably a sympathetic dude, like the equivalent of the lone wolf terrorist type, like the guy who's doing it in the name of the other cause. That's probably, you know, plus adding a little bit of the fact he's out of his fucking mind, I bet.
Have you watched, well, yeah, if you're going to Russia a bunch in the early 60s that from the States, that's pretty wacky considering what relations
unless
were like
Bernie
back then.
Sanders.
I took a class in college. It was strictly like U.S. assassination attempts. That's what the whole class was like.
What?
Yeah, awesome. It was awesome. It was my favorite class. And, like, we spent a week on, you know, Lincoln, and there's a bunch of weird random ones. And what, like, there was an assassination attempt on James Garfield and McKinley and all these just random presidents you never even hear about or even know this happened. Like, guns misfired and weird stuff, and it never really made press. But the JFK one was fascinating. I read this book. It's called Case Closed, and it basically – convinced me at the time, we're talking whatever 15, 20 years ago now, but that it was just Oswald, it was a lone gunman. Then you watch something like Oliver Stone's movie and you're like, holy shit, how could he have shot like that? Is that even possible? Like, I don't know crap about guns, but
neither does Oliver Stone.
It'll be interesting to see what's in these files. That my guess is it's going to be nothing, because like I said, somebody would have leaked something and word would have come out and somebody would have gave Barbara Walters an exclusive interview for a couple $1 million at this point.
Yeah, I'm sure the CIA's main objections are is like some transactional stuff, and it's going to look embarrassing when, you know, it's like it's one of those things that's probably like a 2-week story because someone in Russia goes, oh, look at that, the Americans were spying on Khrushchev or whatever the fuck it is, but then everybody's going to go, oh, wait, yeah, that's right. That was before the Vietnam War. Let's just let it go.
I've got a couple weird stories about teachers I came across.
Another hot one that banged a kid.
I didn't hear about that, but that's kind of boring. That's basic. I like these more interesting ones. A substitute teacher was barred from a Texas elementary school after students reported that the educator put duct tape over their mouths. Carmelo Brooks, a fifth grader at Maxville Elementary School, told his mom he ripped the first strip of duct tape off his face only to have the substitute return and put another over his mouth. He said he and 12 other students sat with their mouths covered for at least 15 minutes. During class Thursday at the Killeen School, the substitute, whose name has not been released, allegedly duct taped the mouths of 10 students and ordered 3 others to do it to themselves. A teacher across the hallway heard the commotion coming from the classroom and went to check in on the children. All the students involved were taken to the nurse's office as soon as school officials learned of the incident. They were uninjured and able to return to class the same day.
What the fuck? Fifth graders, you said?
Yes. What kind of, who, like, it's 2017. Like, you hear stories of, like, nuns and stuff smacking kids' hands with rulers in, like, the 50s and stuff. But, like, at what point could a substitute possibly think it's okay to put duct tape over half the kids' mouths in the classroom?
It's really weird because when you actually listen to the story, I'm like, there's nothing wrong with that. It's duct tape. Like, she put tape on her fucking mouth. It's not like
you can't physically restrain a kid in a class.
She didn't physically restrain them. She's not beating them. She's not tying them down or handcuffing them. She put some duct tape over the mouth. I understand why you can't do it because of the reaction. Parents go, how could you touch my kids? And blah, blah, blah. It's like, but these kids are monsters. These children are just disasters in there. These teachers are just doing their wits end. And, like, yeah,
it was a sub. It wasn't even like a teacher that had been grinding it out. This is somebody who just comes in once every couple days and sits there and hands out worksheets. How stressed out could this substitute teacher be?
I remember how I was in fifth and sixth grade, especially. I absolutely would have deserved this. Like, there's no doubt about it.
You deserve it now, but that's not the point.
When I was back then, somebody should have put duct tape over my mouth. I know what you're getting at. Fuck you. But, I remember there was one time when one of the nuns just lost it. She just took me and my best friend Pat Brown, said, all right, you two sit over here. Just don't talk too loud. I broke a nun. It's like, yeah, they probably should have put duct tape on my mouth, and my mother would have applauded it.
Your mother's evil.
She was a teacher.
Exactly.
She used to crucify children. She invented it.
That story was weird to me. I like that you support it, though. It's good. We're not always on the same page.
I would support pretty much making sure kids just toughen up a little bit. Otherwise, they turn out like me.
I don't know if that's the case.
No, yeah, it's either be a hard ass or you get me. It's the only options.
In Santa Fe, New Mexico, a school teacher is on paid leave after some students told their parents that she was washing their hair in a classroom sink to clean out their hair products, apparently because the teacher is allergic to fragrances.
That's weird.
Okay, good.
Santa Fe Public School, the boys who put gel in their hair.
Santa Fe Public School spokesman Jeff Geppert said that Nina Otero, community school first grade teacher Maria Bernardez, washed 5 students' hair in the classroom sink and was on leave while the district conducts an investigation. A Santa Fe police officer was called to the school Wednesday after a counselor called to report Bernardez's behavior. The officer went to document the information, and there's no criminal matter at issue. School principal told the officer that she spoke with a parent Tuesday morning who said Bernardez washed their child's hair in the classroom sink. After confronting Bernardez about it, Hyde said Bernardez told her that she didn't wash any student's hair because of the smell, but did wash one student's hair because the child had a mohawk.
What? What?
The teacher said she didn't wash any student's hair because of the smell, but washed one student's hair because the child had a mohawk.
I mean, I can understand. You see the kid with the mohawk in class in first grade, you know you have to watch that kid because his parents clearly aren't both around. One of them drinks way too much. There's a lot of yelling in that household. Like, kids in first grade who have mohawks, always a troubled kid. But I wouldn't sit there and go, oh, he's got a mohawk. Yeah, got to wash it. Like, what? That doesn't make any sense. Like, if you see somebody, I can understand somebody's, I want to cut it. Like, I wouldn't support it, but I go, okay, there's a logic to it. Just like, oh, look at that. I can see the sides of your head. I should wash you.
That was the teacher's, like, claim to the principal.
Yeah, that's her excuse.
That's her excuse.
You have a way better excuse was I was allergic to the fragrance. I could be like, okay, you're like, look, it's too uncomfortable for me. I didn't know what else to do. I couldn't kick 5 kids out of class. So I just washed their hair a little bit. It's not a big deal. But when your excuse is, no, I didn't do that. I didn't do that. I didn't do that.
You can't put your hands on a kid like that and wash their hair in a sink. It's like psycho shit.
No, I'm not saying you can crazy. Do it, but at least there's a logic to it. Of
kinda. Or you know what would be more logical? You say, hey, you can't. I'm allergic to that. Please don't wear it. You write a note to the parents.
No,
you email the parents.
No, that's fine.
You say you have an allergy.
I'm not talking about what's more logical, more rational, but there's an A to B line I could see between, I'm allergic to this. It upsets me. I will solve the problem. I can't find any connection between I see mohawk, I want to wash it.
Oh, I just found something awesome. Sorry. But here, the students came back and claimed, students told the principal that the teacher would walk up behind them, put her nose into their hair, and smell it. If their hair had a strong fragrance, the teacher would take the kids to the sink in the classroom and wash their hair with an odorless shampoo.
This now makes more sense.
Children said the water was cold and it scared them. One of the female students told the principal that the teacher told her she was going to wash her hair, and she got scared and ran to the other side of the classroom. At this point, the teacher wet some paper towels and rubbed the child's hair with them in an attempt to get the smell out.
I mean, to me, the biggest thing with this is these kids are, like, in first grade. That's, like, way too young. Like, first graders, that shit can be traumatizing to little kids. Like,
yeah.
If these were the fifth graders, I'd be like, fuck you, you're old enough, you can deal with this stuff. Don't give me this, oh, it hurt my feelings. So, like, first graders are weirdos. Although, I can also understand kind of the teacher being, like, clearly has told these kids, don't do this. And she's going out of her way to smell. I don't know, don't touch kids. Isn't that, like, a rule for all adults? Does that kid belong to you? No, you can't touch them. Just a rule.
When kids are that little, too, you wouldn't even tell them not to use a
they don't have a choice.
But here's the thing. Like, I don't even know what a fragrance in a kid's hair is. They're not putting on perfume or hairspray at first grade. It's like you wash their hair with, like, I still wash, like, my kid's hair in first grade with, like, baby shampoo because if it gets in their eyes, they start fucking crying.
But you have to bathe your kids in first grade? Is that a thing?
Yes.
Really?
Well, I mean, my son's 4 now. In sixth grade,
can't hear him. I can't hear you. If you can hear me. Otherwise, everybody, I hope this was recording. I don't know where Matt went. I can hear him coming in a little bit. Nope. It's still not there, though.
It's hello.
Oh, there he is.
I don't know where I went.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. First grade. Yeah, you're getting there.
I don't know how old that really is. Like, I don't really know what the...
It's 5 or 6.
Okay. I guess that's... That feels like... Yeah, like, I think I was bathing myself then. I don't know. think it's just a long dirty. Time ago.
Probably.
I think it took a lot of baths. I think my mom probably threw us in the bath a lot.
Probably. Anyway, so late breaking news. It's not late breaking, but George Bush Sr. got into some trouble. And I know we were going back and forth about this. Some actress claimed, like, he grabbed her ass at some, like, photo shoot for a movie or something, and he did it in front of Barbara, and he made an inappropriate joke. But we didn't know what the joke was. And Deadspin is reporting that following allegations against him by Heather Lind, a second woman has come forward to say former U.S. President George H.W. Bush told her a dirty joke while groping her as well.
This is pathetic.
And he uses the term David Copperfield is his joke.
He's 90. Like 95. What the fuck do people want from? I don't know what this. That's his joke, David Copperfield. That's a perfect old grandpa joke. What is it? David Copperfield touches their butt. Like, come on, seriously, people. I know everybody's on the Weinstein, let's pile on thing, but you're not allowed to get upset about this after Bill Clinton. Like, I'm sorry, presidents have had. We've just lowered the bar on or raised the bar. I'm not sure where the bar is. Somewhere Cesaro is going, I'm the bar. But that's a deep cut joke. I don't know. Like, Donald Trump, I understand when people are like, I grabbed by the pussy. I'm like, okay, I understand when people are like, that's kind of crude. Some 90-year-old guy, and they're just saying this probably years ago. He has no ability to defend himself. Just let it go. He's an old fucking man.
So this second actress said, this seems to be his move. I guess I was thinking, he's in a wheelchair. What harm could he do?
No.
Then her question got answered. We all circled around him and Barbara for a photo, and I was right next to him, she says. He reached his right hand around to my behind, and as we smiled for the photo, he asked the group, do you want to know who my favorite magician is? As I felt his hand dig into my flesh, he said, David Copperfield. She says others in the room laughed politely and out of discomfort. Former First Lady Barbara Bush was among those nearby. She said something along the lines of, he's going to get himself put into jail, to which we laughed harder.
This sounds really just like fucking nothing. Like, I know that, like, look, it's not sexual harassment when you can just resist the guy by going up one step.
This is so awesome. Bush spokesperson says, on occasion, he has patted women's rears in what he intended to be a good-natured manner.
I'm sure that's what it is. He probably just slaps them on the ass like you would a baseball player or something like that. It's probably just like, damn, it's just a dumb joke, and some part of him probably like, it's even funnier because I'm George H.W. Bush. And I recently, by the way, people, I used to run the fucking CIA, and I was vice president and president. Imagine what I know.
If he remembers it. But at somebody, I think this is somebody from his team or whatever, wrote, at age 93, President Bush has been confined to a wheelchair for roughly 5 years, so his arm falls on the lower waist of people with whom he takes pictures. To try to put people at ease, the president routinely tells the same joke, and on occasion he has patted women's rears in what he intended to be a good-natured manner. Some have seen it as innocent. Others clearly view it as inappropriate. To anyone he has offended, President Bush apologizes most sincerely.
All right. Give me no intent at all. In fact, nobody mentioned this. It's only being brought up because of what's going on right now.
I know. It's
like, come on.
It's so funny.
Fucking old man's dick doesn't work. You should be happy. There used to be a time. There used to be a time when women understood. You took one for the team, but that was the world leader. Like, that was the king. You're just like, yeah, I got to do my duty for my country. Marilyn Monroe understood back when women were property. Yeah, I think he hit his microphone. I don't hear him. Do you guys hear him? Of course you don't hear him. If I can't hear him, you can't hear him. You can probably hear me right now. We'll come back on hello.
Yeah.
There he is. Yeah.
I don't know what's going on, if I keep bumping the cord or what.
Yeah.
Or I got a shitty jack here or something. I don't know. Did you hear about the kids who threw a rock over a overpass on the highway and it landed in a car and killed somebody?
Really?
Yeah, Amelia.
Sounds like an urban legend. Don't do that.
No, this happened. Five teenagers from Michigan have been charged with second-degree murder after being accused of throwing a rock off an overpass that killed a man. Kenneth White, 32, was a passenger in a van that was traveling along I-75 near Flint, Michigan on the night of October 18th when a six-pound rock smashed through the windshield of the vehicle, fatally injuring him.
That's a bully.
He was struck in the face and head, and the rock ricocheted to his chest, causing him to lose consciousness. The driver told police he had to pass four other vehicles, which were disabled on the side of the road because of the rocks, before he could pull over to get help.
Holy shit.
Oh, yeah.
Killing spree. All right, fuck these kids. That's some bullshit.
Well, I mean, what do you do to these kids?
How old are they?
I'm trying to find out. The county prosecutor announced on Monday that the teens ages 15 to 17 are being charged as adults with one count of second-degree murder each. They're also being charged with conspiracy to commit murder, six felony counts each of malicious destruction of property, and two other lesser charges. The prosecutor says it's not a prank, it's second-degree murder. I don't think anybody is laughing, and I think that if there's any warning that both David and I can give is telling young people, you make a bad decision, you could be spending the rest of your life in prison. Police said the group threw a tire and about 20 rocks, one weighing 20 pounds, off two overpasses that night, damaging several vehicles. After throwing the rock that killed White, the teens left the overpass and went to a McDonald's to eat.
I mean, look, the kids are clearly savages, and like not even like the oh we're just dumb teenagers, like you're throwing fucking tires over there, what the hell, that's really fucking nuts. But I mean, I'm gonna throw a tire, and how do you get away with throwing like a tire and 20 rocks? How does nobody catch you?
I don't know,
kill someone, do they stop when they kill a guy, like hey we did it?
I mean, the guy who died was 32. He's the dad. Like, it's somebody's dad's dead because of these kids.
Oh, and it's horrible. I don't agree with charging them as adults, but it's still horrible.
So, I mean, what would you do with them?
They charge them as juveniles. To me, if you're under 18, you're a juvenile. That's it. Because and we do right. that, and I hate this whole, well, it's such a serious crime. It's like, yeah, exactly. We have decided as a society that if you're 15 years old, you're not an adult. Because you can't make adult right. decisions, which I agree with. Just because it's a big adult decision doesn't mean you're allowed to make it. Like, the kid couldn't be like, I'm 15, I want to go buy a gun. And be like, well, I know it's a biggest decision. That's why it's okay for me to do it. Like, yeah, I know I'm 15, like, I'm a kid for the little things. But I want to go vote. They'd be like, no, you can't do it.
How do they determine that if they're going to press, like... If you're not an adult, how do you press charges against somebody who's not 18? How does that work?
There are statutes for juveniles. I mean, there's crimes that kids commit. And usually what happens is they go to jail until they're 21, and then they're out. And it sucks because people see that, oh, it's not fair, and if it's just a couple months, like, yeah, no, it's true. Like, we really probably should just have this idea of figuring out everybody's mental state ahead of time. But we still have juvenile offenses, so I don't like it.
Yeah.
We've decided 18 is the cutoff. Yeah, there's going to be kids who are 17 that are really mature and they can do these things. Guess what? There's also 17-year-olds that could easily vote, who could rent cars, and who could get married and have kids and have sex with the 50-year-old people. We still won't let them do it because there's a lot of other ones that can't do it.
Right. I get it. So... Like, ideally, you would think they should go to juvie and be out at 21?
Yeah.
Okay. With some testing or something or no, some kind of psychiatric evaluation?
No. To me, you're sentenced, your sentence. That's it. I don't like the whole, well, you go to jail, and then we do a test to see if you're smart enough to come out. It's like, you're in jail. Like, what kind of psyche eval says that somebody who's been in jail for killing someone, oh yeah, he's good to go out in society again. Like, you should never be right. So I don't like anything where you gotta like do tests. To me, it's like, this is the punishment. If you do this crime, that's what you get. And don't give any leniency. Just I'm sorry, but a 32-year-old's life isn't more valuable than a 22-year-old, a 52-year-old. So, you know, it's just, somebody's dead, and that's worth however many years you get in the jail.
But isn't that kind of what, like, parole is?
Kind of.
I mean, people get out early for good behavior and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, and I don't really mind parole, because that's like saying just behave while you're out, as opposed to like a test that says whether you're allowed out.
Right, but I mean, if essentially they've got to go convince that board or that group of people that they can be a normal member of society now, and that's sort of like a test, isn't it?
No, yeah, there is a degree to that. I just don't, whenever I get, like, to me that's still lay people. There's still a degree of, like, I think, judicial system at play. Instead of putting the power in, like, a doctor's hand, like, what if the doctor is just a bad doctor and screws up? Like, you're in jail. You know, all because of a doctor, whereas with a parole board hearing, you know, there's usually a board, there's usually three people. I don't know. I just don't like any of these. You're either good to come out or you're not.
I'm right there. Have you ever been to Hawaii?
No.
Me neither. Well, if you ever go to Honolulu, don't try crossing the street while looking at your cell phone.
Oh, yeah.
Honolulu has began enforcing a new law that bans the practice of viewing a mobile electronic device while crossing a street or highway. The Hawaiian capital is the largest city to impose such a restriction in an effort to reduce pedestrian deaths, which were up nearly 10% nationwide in 2016, due in part to distraction caused by the use of electronic devices. So-called crossing text law doesn't prevent people from talking on the devices, just looking at them, and exempts those communicating with emergency services and emergency responders on the job. Fines for first-time violators are set at $15 to $35, while second offenses within the same 12-month period can be fined $35 to $75, and any subsequent ones $75 to $99.
I was actually with them up until they got to the fines part, and then I'm like, oh, okay, that's not real. Like, if there was a significant penalty, I'd be like, fine, look, you're trying to save lives, you're trying to regulate, you know, I think it's an appropriate exercise of government power, you're protecting the safety of multiple the people on the driver's side and everything, but then you're just giving them a $15 fine? Nah, they're just looking to make money. It's just an excuse to try to make money.
What would be a more appropriate punishment?
I don't know. Something that would make you go, fuck me, I'm not going to do this. Like, people will say, I'm just going to look at my phone and go across the street for $15. $15 is like a McDonald's Happy Meal or whatever. Like, I'm not saying it's nothing. When people are talking about, like, a $15 an hour minimum wage, like, we're not talking
But could you pass it? Could you pass a law that says if you're texting on your phone and crossing the street at the same time, you're going to go to jail for a month? Like, that would never fly. The only thing that would fly is probably a fine, right?
Well, I would just have a bigger fine is all.
Oh, you okay.
I just,
all right.
To me, when I hear the punishment, I'm like, I don't think that's – when a punishment isn't really a punishment, to me it's just, oh, again, you're just trying to find a new way to make money. Like, it's not
but,
about
wait, wouldn't a bigger – wouldn't a bigger fine make more money?
Not necessarily, no, because a bigger fine might deter more people. Like, they're not really looking to deter. They're just looking at – it's essentially taxing people's behavior as opposed to deterring it.
Okay. All right. I mean, I don't know how many people are getting hit by cars and how many car accidents are happening because of pedestrians with phones. To me, the bigger issue is people driving and texting in their phone. That seems more dangerous, more likely to get into an accident than somebody walking across the street.
I don't know. I mean, I'm in Chicago every day, and people are fucking morons. Like, they really do walk around like zombies. I'm surprised there aren't more people just dying. Like, there should be one a day at least. Like, I swear, like, I think at least once a month I bet I save somebody's life. Because there's a zombie who walk across the street looking down. When I'm the one saving your life, you're really fucked, dude.
We're going to we got a few things we got to talk about here. A lot of these are throwback stories that we need to revisit because more news is broke. And for our one listener, they probably want an update on some of these stories. But before we get to those, Amazon is in the news for a couple reasons. Right now, police are investigating how 65 pounds of marijuana ended up being shipped to a Florida couple that ordered 4 storage units from Amazon. The couple suspected that something was wrong when they found out that their package shipped via UPS meant to contain 4 empty bins weighed 93.5 pounds. They were extremely heavy, the Orlando woman told the news station, more heavy than you would think from ordering 4 empty bins. Amazon has often been criticized for adding excessive packaging to its deliveries, but when the couple smelled the package, they realized the weight had nothing to do with the wrapping. They called the police after discovering the tightly wrapped, compacted bales of marijuana, which were then seized. But their ordeal isn't over yet. They now fear repercussions from whoever shipped the drugs, which have a street value of hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Man, they're always going to come after them.
I wouldn't think so either. But how does that happen?
That's a big fuck up. I mean, like, listen, people get their mail delivered to the wrong place all the time. I guess eventually it was going to have to be 65 pounds of marijuana. 95 pounds. Somewhere, you know what it is? Probably somewhere that their grandson is just yelling, no, like Darth Vader at the end of episode 3 or something like that.
Sounds
like a bizarre. Sounds like from like Breaking Bad.
A little bit. It's just bizarre. Like, did just get the wrong label on it, the wrong shipping label? Because they got their bins. They got what they were supposed to have, but the bins had 65 pounds of weed in it.
You know what?
Like, that's a lot. Like, I don't know shit about drugs, but
that's a lot of weed,
right?
Yeah.
Last you a while, right?
Given that they sell, you know, weed is usually sold an eighth of an ounce and stuff.
You're right.
And I mean, that's a hefty amount. I wonder if it's going to turn out that it was just somebody in Amazon, the shipping department is transporting the stuff this way, and the guy on the other end fucked up and didn't get it.
I don't know. The couple has sought an apology and an explanation from Amazon, but at the end of exchanges, mostly by email and carried out for more than a month, all they got was a $150 gift card from Amazon with an email reading, I am unable to do anything else at this time.
And what else do they want Amazon to do? They gave them $150, they got their stuff.
Mm.
You know, I'm not saying Amazon will probably do something else, but how much do you really want? What is it going to do? Like, take back the weed? Give you more bins?
Amazon said in a statement that its customer service team was in direct contact with the customer to address their concerns and will cooperate with law enforcement to investigate the case. The authorities said the case is still under investigation and there have been no arrests as yet. Crazy.
I was going to properly label the box of weed, but then I got high.
Yeah, they're saying the street value is 200 grand.
Jeez.
Like you always wonder, like, what you would do in situations like that, where, like, you find the duffel bag of money or all this, like, coke gets shipped to you by accident. Like, what do you do with it, you know?
It really depends on what it is. Like, if it's money, I'm keeping that shit. I'm going to figure out a way to launder it. No doubt about it. In fact, I'm pretty sure I could probably do it pretty easy because I have my attorney-client funds account, and nobody can really investigate that.
That's a good idea. You could also, like, just buy, like, a new bed, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I could do that.
Get a newer TV, a mattress, maybe a nice comforter.
I do need a blanket. It's fucking freezing.
Is it cold in Chicago right now?
Cold as shit.
The weather here is out of control. It's been it was in the mid-70s, yesterday. It's ridiculous for the middle of, it's supposed to be, Halloween in a week. And there's been Halloweens where it's been in the 30s. It's in the 70s. It's crazy.
Yeah, I always had a fucking coat on for Halloween and made all your costumes suck. This is bullshit. I would have said I had a warm Halloween. My costumes would have been cool. There's no point in having a cool costume if you had to put your Colorado Avalanche big bulky jacket on top of you so you didn't freeze. Like, nobody can tell you're Superman if your cape's hidden under your jacket.
Life is tough. A couple weeks ago, we were talking about Walmart, and they were planning to do deliveries, but they were going to have some kind of, like, lockbox outside your house so they could key into your house.
Amazon was doing that.
It was actually Walmart originally, but now Amazon is coming out with the same thing, essentially, called Amazon Key. So Walmart was the one that, like, was kind of the first ones to do this. They were doing it to compete with Amazon because we were talking about brick-and-mortar stores, how they're not doing as well. Toys R Us is bankrupt. Malls are going out of business, that sort of thing. So Walmart was trying to keep up with Amazon and start doing these deliveries themselves and putting the packages inside.
How is there demand for this?
Here's the story with Amazon's plans. It says, no more getting packages stolen, no more worries about being there to receive them. Starting next month, people in 37 U.S. cities can have Amazon drop their package inside their front door without ever giving anyone a key. On November 8th, Amazon will begin offering a secure lock service called Amazon Key that will give Amazon logistics delivery personnel permission to unlock a customer's door for 5 minutes using the Cloud Cam, a new Amazon device shoppers first buy. The entire delivery will be live streamed to the customer and also sent as a video snippet. Service is an effort to thwart one of the problems of Amazon's popular package delivery service, theft, and make it easier for customers to arrange deliveries. The company has been testing Amazon Key for several months at various sites around the country and thinks it's going to be a game changer. This is not a trial. This is the fundamental way we think customers are going to order and receive their goods.
Maybe if they used the drone. I'd let a drone into my house.
It's like all chopping up your, like, lampshades and shit,
yeah,
and it's like goes haywire.
Wait, but yeah. I don't have a person. Like, seriously, what is the market for this? How much is there a demand for people to put this stuff inside of your house? Like, good gosh.
It must be there. I mean, why else would they be doing it?
I mean, I can see this for something, like, really unique and special. Like, you know,
do you think it's more of an issue, like, in cities, like apartment buildings and stuff like that?
It's got to be. Still,
maybe we're just out of touch. I mean,
yeah, that would make sense. But then you'd still have to, they'd have to get access to your apartment.
They would.
And, like, the building itself. So, I don't know. This is weird. Like, it's, I don't know. Maybe stuff does get stolen a lot. But you know what? That's what you get if you live in the city.
I think the idea of the camera gives people some comfort and the idea that you'll see them come in, put the package down, and shut the door behind them.
Yeah, so in real time, I can watch them take all my shit.
But they're not going to because they're on camera.
Do.
You know who's taking it, and you can find the person, and you know they work for Amazon.
Well, like, Amazon knows who's delivering their shit.
Well, I think that's what it is. These are Amazon employees who deliver the stuff. It's
right,
not.
I get that,
it's not like UPS.
I'm just trying to figure out, like, why do I need a camera to see it? Like, if they're gonna steal shit, they're gonna.
I think it gives people the sense of security that they won't.
It's a gimmick. Frankly, yeah. I don't want to see it. I would feel weird. Like, I'd rather. Holy fuck! I just realized something.
What's that?
I think Jeffrey Bezos. I think he's trying to become Santa Claus. He just wants to leave shit inside of your house when you're not paying attention. He'd be quiet about it. You'll never know he was there. You just come down in the morning and there's a box of shit you want. He's gonna be goddamn fucking Santa Claus.
The delivery person is first instructed to knock on the door or ring the doorbell. If no one answers, the delivery person swipes a button in the app that sends a message up to the cloud, which sends a message down to the customer's Amazon-enabled smart lock. This allows the delivery person to swipe a button on the app that unlocks the door. Note that the delivery person never touches the lock and doesn't have a key or a code. The delivery person opens the door just a crack, puts the package inside the door, and then closes the door, he said. The worker then swipes another button on the app that automatically locks the smart lock. He must confirm that the door is closed and locked before leaving.
Look, I'm sure they're going to tell me all these security protocols and this and that and blah, 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 blah. Somebody's definitely going to get raped from this. This is screams disaster.
People get raped anyway.
Yeah, but usually not by Amazon.
Yeah, but you're going to get raped by an employee of a company. You let people come in and paint your house and fix your oven.
At least I know who those people are, and I'm there.
Do you?
To me, it's because I'm there. Like, I'm
if
the one
you have to be there to get raped.
Yeah, but you don't have to open the door. To me, that's the thing. Is like somebody being able to open my door without me there. Yeah. Maybe somebody can get my house without me knowing. And I don't want to get raped. I'm afraid of that.
You should be. You should be concerned.
I'm very rapeable.
It's already offered in Sweden. Amazon Rape? Isn't the... yeah, they'll offer it to you there. They're good like that. Amazon isn't the first to launch such an inside-the-front-door delivery system.
More rapes per capita there than anywhere in the world.
Is it really?
I don't know about in the world. But
it's colder. It has to do with temperature.
Oh, I bet there's some other reason why all of a sudden Sweden's had a huge rise in their rape rate. And it's not the cold.
I don't know what it is.
Well, they don't like to talk about any of the identifying characteristics of the rapists anymore. They've actually made it against the law in Sweden, I think it's Sweden or Norway, one of them, to record the ethnicity of the rapists.
Oh, is it because of the Syrians or something?
Yeah, it's all the immigrants. It's all just this wave of migration. Like, there's all these no-go zones and shit like that.
Huh. Yeah. I'll have to read up. That's...
terrifying. Ugh.
News to me.
Rape culture. Hashtag me too.
But anyway, in Sweden, on an informal basis, UPS customers nationwide have long given keys to drivers they've known for years. And in Sweden, the Postal Service began a pilot project this spring that gave package delivery staff a one-time use code to the customer's smart locks, allowing them to leave a package inside.
This is going to be like universal healthcare, where people don't realize just because it works in Scandinavia doesn't mean it works. There's just really nice people there.
Could be. I've got a restaurant story. This one relates to the national anthem protest, though. So we're combining themes here, which is really smart of me. Oakland A's catcher Bruce Maxwell, 26, claimed this week that a waiter in his Alabama hometown of Huntsville refused him service after identifying him as the Major League Baseball player who took the knee during the Star Spangled Banner last month. Only the waiter has a very different version of events. The waiter said, "He is outright lying. This is really upsetting as he was given full service. I didn't even know who Bruce Maxwell was," Matt Henry, a 42-year-old waiter at Keegan's Public House, told Fox News. "This all started because I carded his friend who wanted to order a beer." According to Henry, Maxwell was down with local Democratic councilman Devin Keith and another friend who produced an expired ID, and the server refused to serve him a drink, which upset the friend who followed him into the kitchen. He asked me, "Don't you know who Bruce Maxwell is?" and told me I was making everyone feel uncomfortable. Nobody was even paying attention to him, the waiter claimed. "I didn't know anything about him or the kneeling. All I know is a friend of mine 15 years ago lost his job for serving someone a drink who happened to be underage. So if anyone looks under 30, I'm going to card them." The waiter said the councilman then complained to the restaurant's manager about Maxwell being uncomfortable, and the manager simply swapped me to another table, and it was no big deal. So basically, this baseball player who's been taking a knee, he plays for the A's.
He's the backup catcher, by the way.
Okay.
The backup catcher for the A's.
Right.
He's barely a professional.
So Bruce Maxwell is his name. He's been taking a knee, and he was claiming that he was discriminated against by this waiter because the waiter knew he was taking a knee, and the waiter totally denies it. And to me, his story makes sense. So I'm not sure why Maxwell is saying this.
Yeah, I don't know. To me, like, again, you know better than anybody pretty much, but waiters and waitstaff, they'll take all kinds of shit. Like, they're not going to give a shit. I mean, good gosh, if O.J. Simpson walks in, they're going to wait on him and try to get a big tip. Like, they need the fucking money. And maybe this Maxwell, maybe this is his hometown or something. Otherwise, why would anybody anywhere, especially in Alabama or whatever, who the fucking backup catcher for the A's is? Like, if it's Colin Kaepernick, fine. Like, you can see that afro coming from a ways away. But nobody knows what the backup catcher looks like.
It's really weird. Maxwell told TMZ Sports this week that the waiter said to him, "You're the guy who took the knee?" After confirming he was, Maxwell alleged that the waiter then responded, "I voted for Trump and I stand for everything he stands for," and then refused to serve him.
You know what I bet? If I had a guess to try to figure out a way that both these sides could be true, setting aside the simple one that it could just be that Maxwell's just a liar, that he's just a guy that is looking for attention because he's the backup catcher for the A's and he's got to do something for his career. But it could very well be that the waiter story is accurate. He's like, "I'm not serving this guy. He's underage. I can't prove it." He walks away. One of Maxwell's dumb buddies, probably drinking or whatever, goes, "Don't you know who this guy is? You know, he's the A. He's the one that kneels for the..." And the guy's like, "Well, I voted for Trump, but I don't support that stuff." And then the manager just said, "You're moving to Section 3. And that was that.
Yeah, it's weird. It's a weird one because it probably is something like that. At the same time, I tend to believe the waiter's story just by the details, and there's even quotes in here from the manager of the restaurant, and I'm like, it sounds fairly reasonable. Like the manager
for the A's.
Right.
Seriously. I don't know the backup for the Giants.
I wouldn't know him. And they're in Alabama. I mean, I guess it's the guy's hometown. He's probably kind of a local celebrity, I'm guessing. Like, it's Huntsville, Alabama. How many celebrities are going into restaurants around there? And I bet he does get recognized in Huntsville, but...
Maybe. I've heard of Huntsville, at least. It's not that small.
Right. But the restaurant manager said, "The waiter came to me and told me that a guy wanted a beer, but his ID was not valid, and told him he absolutely could not give it to him. We can go to jail for that in the state of Alabama. It was his friend causing all the fuss. None of us even knew who this baseball player was. I told him I had no idea who he was going on about. Eventually, the waiter just asked if we could put another server on the table, so I did. I can't believe this story." To me, it's pretty cut and dry. If I heard a weird restaurant story, I'm like, that never happens. Like, that's reasonable. Some restaurants are play by the rules and follow that stuff. And every once in a while, there's a sting. Like, I know on the Cape, just 9 restaurants got busted for serving an underage girl. Police send out underage people with IDs because there are laws and they're trying to enforce them, which, whatever, it's fine. The story seems legit to me, but it's also weirder that this catcher would make up the story. The whole thing's kind of weird, but I figured it related to some of our
Maybe the buddy made up the story to the catcher to make himself seem like, "Hey, I told that guy, I told him who you were. He said I didn't like you because he likes Trump."
That's actually probably what happened.
Yeah,
and it sounds reasonable.
Aside of that, or I have to think. Well, on the one hand, we'd have an athlete acting like an entitled jerk. I think I've heard that before. On the other hand, we'd have to have a guy in Huntsville, Alabama, know who the backup catcher for the Oakland A's is, be upset that he's taken a knee, confront him on it, refuse to serve him, be backed up by his manager who then goes along with a lie saying, "I would never do that." Why would you do that? If you have a problem with him taking the knee because you love Trump and you're not going to serve him, if you're asked about it, you're going to say, "Yeah, you're damn right I did. I love America." You're not going to go, "No, I never do that." Like, what's the point of making a stand if you don't take any credit for the stand?
Right. Yeah.
But like, it'd be like if Colin Kaepernick took a knee, and then later on they asked him, "So, you have a problem with police and justice?" No, I think the cops are great.
Well, sometimes when the heat gets turned up, you wimp out. I almost said pussy out, but I know you don't like to say that.
Pussed out's fine, but pussy is, yeah, that's different.
In a follow-up to our story about the Chicago who was found dead in a freezer of that hotel you like to go to.
Oh, yeah.
It's been closed. Shockingly. The investigation into the death of Kenneka Jenkins, a 19-year-old Chicago woman.
Did the health department determine there was an excess level of death in the premises?
Was found dead in a hotel's walk-in freezer, is officially closed, according to Rosemont Police. Officials released photos, surveillance videos, audio tapes, and a timeline of events to the public on their website Friday. Authorities determined her death was accidental and said there was no evidence that indicated any other conclusion. However, lawyers for the teen's mother, Teresa Martin, say the photos raise more questions about what happened to Jenkins than they answer. Graphic pictures showed parts of Jenkins' body exposed in the hotel freezer where she was found dead. An officer went into the freezer after a hotel worker found Jenkins' body, said she was frozen solid. There was video that was released when this initially happened, and I know we talked about it. She was, like, stumbling around the hotel. She was by herself. She was, like, clearly either really drunk or on. She was in no condition to work, as they used to say about Sabu in the ECW days. But there was no real hard evidence of how she got into this walk-in freezer, and obviously people will suspect foul play. People think, like we said, the Cubans killed JFK. So it's interesting that the case was closed and they say there's no issue, but there's going to be some sort of outcry and there's got to be another investigation going on to see what the hell happened here, right?
Yeah. Probably not. Unless the family's attorney will probably have to shell out for it. As part of the lawsuit, but I mean, somebody fucked up. We know that. People don't just die in freezers all the time. That's usually a rarity. And, we'll see. It could just end up as a cold case. We don't know.
I mean, it's the toxicology report showed no drugs in her system, but listed alcohol as a significant contributing factor.
Oh, that's a drug.
Right. Well, they're talking like date rape drugs or, you know, something more suspicious, I guess.
Doesn't really do very much good to date rape them if they wander into a freezer and die. Harvey Weinstein would just walk in and hump their leg then.
Yeah, I wasted my roofies again. Damn it.
Always been there.
Harvey Weinstein's crazy.
Yeah.
That guy is, like, every day there's a new one. It's amazing.
It's kind of... It just more and more shows the absolute absurdity of me thinking any of these assholes in Hollywood didn't know.
Right.
Like, seriously, this is way beyond just, a few things here and there. Like, you guys know what he's fucking doing. Just say it. Just say, yeah, I knew, but I didn't, like, know. Like, I didn't know enough to, like, prove it, but the guy's a dick.
Instead, right.
You guys were out there praising him and loving him and...
I mean, Quentin Tarantino kind of said that.
Yeah.
He's like, I kind of knew and I didn't do anything. She's like, huh.
I think some of those are... A lot of those guys are trying to keep quiet because this whole thing is going to be a mess.
Yeah, I think we're going to find out a lot of stuff about a lot of people in the next few months that...
Let's see if we get one woman to actually admit, yeah, I stuck somebody's dick and got an Oscar. Like, everybody's saying that they were propositioned. Nobody said yes. And men don't try things that don't work.
Getting the Oscar's a different thing. You'd have to blow a bunch of people to do that.
Well, he helps you get the movie the role. That's the first part of it.
We need to talk about the Baltimore Fatberg again. That's the big thing of poop and wet wipes and tampons that are clogging. First one was in London, and then we had one in Baltimore. You claim that could never happen in the United States, and then a week later there was one.
But not really United States, but yeah.
News outlets report the city's public works department used a camera, pressure washer, and truck-mounted industrial vacuum to clear the mass of curled grease, wet wipes, and other waste. Workers resorted to the strategy Monday after they'd begun scraping pieces off last month. The notorious glob was found clogging up 85% of a 24-inch pipe near Penn Station. It's blamed for causing more than 1 million gallons of sewage to overflow into Jones Falls. It's the culmination of objects caked along a pipe's walls that shouldn't go down drains. We can't treat our toilets like trash cans, Pat Boyle of the Public Works Department said.
Can we treat our trash cans like toilets?
Can you piss in it? I wouldn't suggest pissing or shitting in a trash can, no.
You haven't lived then.
I haven't. I've never done either of those in a trash can, I don't think.
I'm sure I've pissed in one. I don't know.
Intentionally pissed in a trash can?
Yeah, probably.
But why, like, because you were shit-faced or something?
Yeah, I'm presuming it, well, either drunk or...
But why wouldn't you just piss on the ground? Okay. Like,
if you're inside, you're in the basement, you don't want to walk all the way upstairs to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, I would have just walked upstairs.
My brother pissed in a humidifier in our basement in our old house once.
Oh!
Didn't tell anybody.
That's pretty bad.
Actually, I think he and I used to both do that all the time. We were disgusting monsters.
Yeah, that's pretty gross. Yeah. Huh.
I don't think we really understood how a humidifier worked.
We had a bathroom in our basement. Our basement was like... Huh.
And our basement was unfinished and... It just had some paint cans down there from the last owner. Brian and I played hockey one. No, we went. I'm sorry, we didn't. But that was before we played hockey down there. We went bowling with it, and now there's even to this day there's a gigantic stain on the concrete.
Yeah, I've still got the paint cans from the previous owner in this house, and I've lived here 11 years.
Yeah, everybody's got paint cans, and that can't be safe. People are always worried, like, if you have a gun in the house, the kid's going to kill themselves. Meanwhile, they got paint cans everywhere.
What are paint cans going to do?
Kid can eat the paint.
You think a little kid's going to get, like, a screwdriver and pop the top off of a paint can and get a spoon and eat the fucking paint in the can?
Kids are resourceful and stupid.
Have you ever heard of that? A kid eating paint and getting sick? Like, you talk about, like, lead paint, like, yeah. 50... But that was, like, sweet, and that's why the kids liked it. Like, and that was off walls. It wasn't closed paint cans.
I don't know. Kids get bored. They get into shit.
Okay. Watch your kids better.
Yeah.
And finally, we have a follow-up to the Iditarod drug cheat dogs.
Sticks.
I know. Can you believe these dogs? Unbelievable.
You know what? In their defense... After they got their balls cut off, they had some issues with their dicks, and they needed a dick pill.
Yes. The Iditarod Trail Committee confirmed four of Dallas CV's dogs tested positive for tramadol, a banned opioid pain reliever. CV posted a statement on YouTube denying he gave four of his dogs the banned substance. He also said he has withdrawn from the 2018 Iditarod. CV won the Iditarod in 2012 and then again in 2014, 2015, and 2016. So this is like the Lance Armstrong of dog racing. This guy's like on an unparalleled streak of winning this dog sled race up in Alaska. In a statement on October 9th, the Iditarod Trail Committee announced it was amending its rules after several dogs in a single musher's team in the 2017 race tested positive for a prohibited substance. Under the previous rule, the organization had to demonstrate explicit intent by the musher. The new rule now holds a musher strictly liable for any positive test. So basically, they didn't know who it was, but go figure, it's the guy who's won the race the last five times.
Maybe he's just a super musher, and he's overcoming all these other drug cheats.
Like Lance Armstrong.
Yep. Just like Lance Armstrong. He also, again...
Well, it's kind of coincidental that he's the one that got caught, though, and nobody else tested positive.
Well, also keep in mind and remember what I just said. You thought I was making a joke about the dogs got their balls cut off and they, mm-hmm. you know, need a dick pill.
Yes.
Who else had a ball cut off?
Lance Armstrong.
Exactly. Connect the dots. Connect the balls.
Connect the cocks.
That's even better than connect the balls. Damn it. I want to end on connect the cocks. That's good.
The committee releases a statement on October 17th announcing the positive test. Urine samples had been collected 6 hours after the race finished in Nome, Alaska. Testing officials estimated the dogs received the banned substance somewhere between 15 hours prior to and up until being tested after the race. The ITC hadn't named CV and only did so after facing criticism from the mushers who wanted CV identified. Racing teams are randomly drug tested before and during the Iditarod, and the top finishers expect to be tested when they complete the race. It's just like so similar to like real sports that it's just weird to think people are drugging their dogs to win this race. I guess I shouldn't be surprised.
No, I mean, look, these are human beings that are willing to take a bunch of dogs, hook a harness up to them, and race them for like 100 miles across the snow. So I'm guessing that they don't really have the dog's best interest at heart. It's just a guess. Probably a bit of a dick.
Probably. I wouldn't. Actually, I would make my Puggle do that if she was capable. Anything else going on in the world?
Nope.
All right, let's shut this down. Thank you for listening to MMA and Stuff on HalfGuarded.com. My name is Matt. That was Mike. You can check it out on the website, iTunes, Google Play. Thanks for listening. Twitter, Instagram, we're all over the place. You just got to go look for us. Thanks for listening.
I'm finished.